720 WGN. It is Dane in for Dean until 1 p.m. And don't worry, we're going to have a lot of great Dean Richards elements in on today's show, along with hopefully a little respite from the cold. We're back. We had some unseasonably warm weather a little bit ago, and now, you know, with spring training happening, you got to feel sort of that good weather state of mind. So we're going to be kind of tying into a few different things. Both Cubs and Sox are down in Arizona for spring training, but also racing is happening as well. And so a little bit later on, just in a few minutes after the first break, we'll talk with Latasha Causey. She is the president of Phoenix Raceway, where they will have not only NASCAR, their typical NASCAR weekend at that great track, but bringing back IndyCar. IndyCar so close to us here at WGN Radio is the first station to ever broadcast the Indy 500. So excited to talk with her. In addition to that, we are going to have the far-flung forecast. And this offers Dave Schwann the opportunity to really expand. He hasn't gone intergalactic yet, right? He still maintains it within sort of the orbital service of the Earth. But with the Olympics happening, so many other places have become relevant and interesting, and people are excited to know about it. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, because I certainly don't even know what the cat is like, but I don't know. Maybe Dave's got something planned. I know it will be great for that. Then it comes into health. You can't enjoy anything if you're not healthy. And Dr. Santina Wheat is going to be on with us to talk about some of the things that are happening, not only in the news, but things that we should definitely kind of check out and be aware of, and maybe give a little insight into some of those mysterious ailments that are out there. I know there's been some big news stories with Eric Dane. We had a personal one that was something I want to get her advice on, and of course your thoughts as well. 312-981-7200. You can go ahead and if you've got some questions for Dr. Wheat, definitely add those in. You can text them. Eli Burke in the booth will definitely help out with that, and we'll try to see if we can address those as well. Plus, if you've got any thoughts, today is one of those unique days, not only because it is Sunday, which is a nice day to celebrate and to worship and just do all sorts of things that you can do around the house, but also it is a consequential day in sports with the Olympics and the Olympics men hockey team trying to follow in the footsteps of the ladies and come back with a gold medal. Eli, just your thoughts on this. So the 80, the miracle on ice is one of those things in sports lore. It might as well be, Washington crossing the Delaware. I mean, it's the thing for you as a younger guy. It's just a story, right?
Right, yeah. So this game, waking up this morning, I was blasting Freebird as I was taking my morning shower, getting ready for the Stars and Stripes take on Team Canada, and what for anybody born after 1980 is our version of like that big game. We haven't had really anything since 2010, where the U.S. played Canada in the last gold medal game. That game went to overtime. It was thrilling, back and forth. Canada won that one, and this is the next opportunity Team USA's had at a gold medal since then. So. Been a long wait, been an exciting week, especially with just the games that have been stellar all week. It's been awesome to have the NHL talent around, and this game's got my heart pounding quite a bit.
2002, they came back with a silver medal. Chris Chelios was the captain of that team. Jeremy Roenick talked with him last week, just texting with Chris Chelios earlier today, saying, hey, if they win, maybe you might want to give a shout-out, because it is also, it's National Margarita Day. I know that you probably are aware of that. I know you saw the parades coming in. The traffic is all backed up. It is National Margarita Day, and, of course, El Bandito Yankee here. It's the official tequila of game day. We're also going to talk with Jen Jolly. She's our tech person, Techishly Jen. She's got that podcast. And so in addition to maybe giving a couple cool gadgets and items and things in the tech world that can make our lives more interesting and maybe even better, there's that big consequential trial going on, the social media trial. She sort of likens it, and I think a lot of people make those comparisons to the tobacco trial, where you have this product out there and you have a huge industry that is pushing the product, knowing that, number one, it may be addictive, and then number two, that there may be some health consequences. Obviously, it's not as black and white as breathing in smoke and getting cancer, right? But just your thoughts on that, Eli, because you're one of those in a generation that is, you've always had screens, you've always had this as part of your life. It's not something that you were introduced to. I mean, do you see it as a negative, a positive, a bit of both?
I try to work with it as much as I can. It's really hard for me to just avoid, just with where we're sitting, where we're working. So it's been definitely a lot more of a mental task, just make sure I'm budgeting myself correctly, make sure I'm not like leaning into it too much at all to risk any like health issues for myself. But I know that for a lot of other people my age or in my position, that it's not as easy to keep up with.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're going to see. A lot of people have views on this, and we'll see the rest. Views as far as the Bears Stadium, I think we want there to be a new Bears Stadium, right? Maybe there's limitations with the one that's there, and we want it to be somewhere, and most people want it to be in Illinois. But Indiana's making a great case for it, and Lou Weisbach, he's part of that group that is making a great presentation and proposal, very enticing for the Bears to be able to take it 20 minutes away and still on the lakefront, and a lot of financial incentives for the Bears for sure. And then, I don't know, hopefully he'll be able to share some of those incentives for the fans to be able to celebrate what is a Bears team for the first time in really a long time, really worth celebrating. And then before we go, we are going to talk with Bill Curtis, legendary voice. Think of him as that automatic kind of go-to on the news side, but also Anchorman. If you watch that, people love him. He's got that funny side. Got a new book called Whirlwind, and we're going to talk with Bill Curtis as well. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have Latasha Causey giving us all of the, I don't know if she's going to rub it in, right, how nice it is in Arizona, but we'll hear about that. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it is Dane in for Dean. And if you've been outside yet, and maybe you haven't, it's cold. It's maybe 23 degrees. And on the line, we've got a person as ambassador, not only for great weather, but amazing racing as a person leading the way there at really what I would say is one of the premier motorsports facilities in the country, maybe the world. It is Latasha Causey, president of Phoenix Raceway. Latasha, welcome back to WGN.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So, Latasha, first off, are you in Arizona right now? Or cause a lot of times you'll travel. I've seen you here. You visit us here in Chicago. Are you in Atlanta?
Yes. No, I did not go to Atlanta, actually. I was in Daytona, of course, but I'm in Arizona today. I'm getting prepared for our race weekend.
Man, it gets no bigger. It's always a great place to go, and now you guys, I mean, probably often you coincide, but we've got our teams, the Cubs and the Sox, both play their spring training ball down there, and people always ask, you know, they go to the games and there's so much to do, the restaurant scene, it's just a vibrant community down there. They think like, well, what else can we do while we're there? And to have an opportunity to build in that race weekend at Phoenix with you is just really cool.
Yes, I agree. I mean, there's so much going on, like you said, in our market, from spring training to everything, right, going on right now, as well as, you know, you have the NBA that's going on at the same time for our spring weekend as well. But for you guys, as you said, you have both the Cubs and the White Sox that are here in our market, and we have great relationships and partnerships with our ballparks. And so I always say, when you're in town enjoying the weather here in Arizona, come check us out as well at Phoenix Raceway during our race weekend.
Yeah, and I always think of Phoenix Raceway as really one of the stars of NASCAR and of racing, where people, regardless of the race, regardless of even who's racing, the sight lines are just amazing. It's just a really great facility. It was one of those that was updated not too long ago and built in so many fan-friendly elements, whether it's the ways that fans can view the garages, a lot of the amenities that are there as far as the concessions. Talk a little bit about that. You know, for people familiar with maybe going to a race but haven't been, what do they see?
Yes, absolutely. Well, like you said, Phoenix Raceway is just special. It just pops up, if you will, out of the mountain as you're headed into the city of Avondale. And for us, as you said, you know, we renovated Phoenix Raceway back in 2018, really with the fan in mind. We wanted to make sure that it had a space and place for everyone, whether you are camping. You know, our campers come in the Monday before race week and leave the Monday after. So always something to do in our massive campground area. Or if it is someone who is there strictly for racing and strictly there for the race weekend, as you said, our infield, it is a delight. You will see drivers walking around, whether we intentionally or unintentionally, it's just the space and place that we had in mind for our race fans to be able to see our drivers.
And coming up this time, you have hosted over a number of years the championships, always big stakes happening there at Phoenix Raceway. And this year, you are bringing something back that I think if, you know, listeners will remember back Chicagoland Speedway. When it first opened, it was a combination effort between IndyCar and NASCAR, and fans got to see both of those great series and the stars of those series on the track racing in that same weekend, and it doesn't happen often. There's been somewhere we've seen it at Indianapolis, and there's been some different kind of combination. It isn't something that happens very often. It is happening with you guys. Talk a little bit about maybe the dynamics. Our connection here with IndyCar is, you know, we broadcast the Indy 500. WGN was the first station to ever broadcast the 500. IndyCar, very near and dear to us here. Just exciting to have them both in Phoenix.
Yes, I could not agree with that more. I mean, we're so excited to have IndyCar as a doubleheader for us. You know, IndyCar, you know, dates back all the way to when we opened back in 1964, racing here way back then. The last time the IndyCar has been in Arizona was in 2018. And so for us to be able to do this as a doubleheader, as a matchup, you know, during our race weekend is just an amazing thing for us. And, you know, when I first started, our fans would ask me consistently, hey, when are you bringing IndyCar back? When are you bringing IndyCar back? And here we are. We're bringing IndyCar back. And not only are we bringing it back, but we're doing it in partnership with our NASCAR weekend. And so we're really, really excited about that. And we know our fans are as well, because the tickets are going fast. Saturday is going to be a very full day for our doubleheader, for sure.
Let the listeners know. Giving the people what they want, doing the people's work. Latasha Causey, yes, president of Phoenix Raceway. And that is one of the things that you guys do on a consistent basis. So obviously taking advantage of some of the people that are going to be out there for all those things, whether it's the NBA or spring training. But you build all these other elements in to the race weekend. For fans off the track, what other things are they going to experience?
Yes, for sure. Well, you know, I'm excited to say that, you know, as you just said, I'm always trying to think of something creative. I have one of the best teams in Phoenix. You know, I just kind of throw these ideas out there, and then the team goes above and beyond to execute. One thing that we're really excited about this year is that we're going to have what's called the Stillery Fest, which will be inside of our campground area, which is going to have bull riding. It's kind of like a rodeo, but you can't really call it a rodeo because it's going to be with just bulls. But professional bull riders out there, we're going to have a concert going on the Straight Talk Wireless stage. And so, you know, for us, we're always looking for more. As you said, our weather is perfect, so it's always a good time to be outside and be enjoying the entertainment. So while the Stillery Fest is in our campground, it is open essentially to the public. It will be, you know, out there on both Thursday and Friday night. And so, you know, I'm always trying to do something new and something different. But as well, you know, our weekend will be just a full weekend of events, both on and off the track. I mean, for us as well, I mean, you know, we're starting racing this time on Thursday with the ARCA Menard Series, right? And so we'll have Thursday racing, Friday is practice and qualifying, Saturday is that doubleheader with both IndyCar and then the NASCAR O'Reilly Auto Parts Series, and then, of course, you know, Cup Sunday, you know, will be a thrill as well. So, I mean, it almost feels, you mentioned championship, it's feeling like a championship weekend for sure to kick off the season.
I wanted to get your thoughts. A lot of the NASCAR, like, track presidents will travel from track to track, whether it's to kind of give advice, get best practices, maybe pick up some tips, maybe just kind of learn or maybe interact with fans and get some thoughts. And like I said, you were down there at Daytona, you were here in Chicago, and the connection with the military side. We have a show called Veteran Voices here on WGN, which highlights a lot of those stories, and racing has that great connection with the veterans. So you've got the GovX 200 that's going to be happening with you, and I wanted to get your just kind of your thoughts as NASCAR sort of goes out there and tries to be different things in different areas. The race that's going to happen at the Naval Base, I think it's Coronado, right, in San Diego. Just your thoughts on that and the excitement maybe within sort of the higher powers of NASCAR for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think it just really talks about what we're doing to just diversify our fan base holistically, right? I mean, to be able to do unique things and provide unique opportunities in the world of motorsports is just an amazing thing. Amy Lupo and her team have done a phenomenal job in getting prepared for our Coronado race, as you mentioned, that will be on the Naval Base, the first time ever doing that as well. And like you said, doing unique things like Chicago, a Chicago street race. You know, Julie Giese has done that for 3 years and, of course, just knocked it out of the park every year. And so I have no doubt that, you know, the base and the race on the base will be knocked out of the park as well. Of course, I will be there in supporting Amy Lupo and the team and really making sure that our fans have an experience that they will have never had before, and appreciating our military. I mean, for the military to allow us the opportunity to do it on the Naval Base, of course, it's our opportunity to respect them and respect their space and do something different for them.
Yeah, and as excited as people were for the street race and that unique experience, and then we hope to have that back. People are genuinely really excited to get back to Chicagoland, a home base, familiar, a great track, and many of the drivers that I've talked to, they absolutely love it too. So they're excited to get back there. We hope to see you out here in Chicago for that one as well. And before we let you go, as all those people are making their way down to Arizona for some better weather and maybe some better baseball, right? Give information where people can get more information about everything happening at Phoenix Raceway, get some tickets, come out and see you.
Yes, for the Straight Talk Wireless 500, definitely go to phoenixraceway.com to get the tickets. I mean, like I said, they are going fast, so we definitely want to make sure we see you there. And, you know, we'll have some walk-up tickets as well for those folks who are just in town trying to figure out what there is to do. We got racing every day, so definitely make sure you come check us out.
We'll have links up at WGNradio.com for all of it. Latasha, thanks so much for what you're doing on the inspirational side for everybody in all those race fans, and thanks for jumping on the show today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, that's going to be great. I'm excited about that. You know, and maybe Dave's far-flung forecast, it might be someplace warm. Maybe he's going to give us a, you know, a tropical location. Well, I don't know that Arizona's tropical, but, you know, it is definitely warmer. And then coming after that, we've got Dr. Santina Wheaton. She's going to be talking health. 312-981-7200. You can add your thoughts. If you've got maybe something in the health realm, a question that you've got, we can ask and add to that as well. And, of course, that same number, 312-981-7200, for your maybe favorite Olympic moment. Not everything is maybe hockey-related for you. Maybe you're a luge fan. Maybe you're a curling fan. I actually was watching Eli. I was watching more. It sounds weird. I was watching more curling than ever. But you know, it's the Olympics of that one time where, with a little bit of backstory, a couple hype videos, you can get into things that you would never watch in July that you're watching, and you really get invested in this winter sports.
Right, especially with curling too. It was on literally every day of these Olympics. It was hard to miss curling specifically. But that's the best part about these Olympics. You get the international spotlight on all the sports that you wouldn't be watching any time of the year. So it's super cool to see these athletes shine and just all new stories come up.
Does this ever light the fuse for, is there going to be like a national, like a international curling league or something? Maybe pickleball could have started this way. Like, maybe?
I could totally see it happening. Maybe we're not too far away from pickleball being put into the summer games.
Oh my God. Well, it deserves it. It has a fan base.
It just needs a movie to get some steam.
Maybe Dave will have the pickleball headquarters. Maybe that'll be the far flung forecast. We will see after the break. Keep it here. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. And now it's time for the far flung forecast.
Thank you very much, Dan. Good morning, everyone. Get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices. We are staying in the United States this morning. As a matter of fact, heading out to Colonial Beach, Virginia, which has a population of around 3,900. It was named the best Virginia beach for 2018 by USA Today. Also in 2019, Reader's Digest naming the place the nicest place in Virginia. Colonial Beach, a popular resort and very popular in the mid-20th century before the Chesapeake Bay Bridge made ocean beaches along the eastern shores of Maryland and Delaware and so forth many more accessible to people from Washington. But we bring up Colonial Beach today because 294 years ago today, not far from where Colonial Beach is today, in Westmoreland County, George Washington, our first president, was born 294 years ago today. So the Colonial Beach area, not only a resort destination, but also an historic destination, because that's a national historic site, the George Washington birthplace. So Colonial Beach is also watching the weather there, because they'll be affected by this massive storm that's moving up the Atlantic. Right now they have light rain and 40 degrees.
I'm sure, Dave, they've got a sign as you drive into Colonial Beach, Virginia, that says home of, right?
Probably, yes.
Home of George Washington. You wonder if the town is able to capitalize on that, and if they're like, we need to make more out of this.
Well,
you know?
I imagine they do. As a matter of fact, the address, if you're interested in mailing or contacting the George Washington birthplace, the address for that is Colonial Beach. So, you know, it's just about, 10 miles away, if that.
Wow. So think about this. You mentioned it was a former popular destination.
Well, it still is. But, you know, now with the Chesapeake Bay Bridge, believe me, when you go to those beaches in Delaware and Maryland, they're Ocean City and so forth, they're quite popular.
Yeah. Hey, I wonder if George Washington was a swimmer. You know, we see some of those those old time, because, you know,
well,
some of the things people
the
do.
He crossed the Delaware River in a boat. I don't know if he
saying he would have done that. It was like a military. He wasn't a Navy SEAL or anything. But you wanted to just recreationally what people. It was a more serious time. You look at all the pictures. You know, they felt it was silly to smile in a picture. And so you wonder if the people had fun, you know, and that fun side of maybe a George Washington, or if he just jumped in full, like, uniform.
With the clothing that they wore back then, you would sink. as heavy as that clothing was.
Eli, they didn't have like good things for floaties. It would have been like a cow stomach inflated or something. He had like donkey teeth or something, right? Yeah. He didn't have a lot of options. All right, Dave, I guess it's in overtime for the Olympics. People want to go out there and see that, you know, as far as Milan. Have you ever been to any place like that?
We were in Milan and didn't spend a great deal of time there in 2006. We went all through Italy and had a really wonderful time. I may make a suggestion to everybody. If you're thinking about going to Italy and doing a European trip, just do Italy and do other things at another time, because there's so much to see. And we bit off more than we could chew, really, when we went to Italy. You know, Milan, Venice, Rome, etc. Wow. And the picture of the Duomo, the big church that you see, the cathedral there, that is a sight to behold.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So inspirational stuff, but also far-flung in moderation, right, as well. Dave Schwann, you give it all to us. Thanks so much.
You bet.
720 WGN. It is Dane in for Dean. And This Week in Health is sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Always great to have on with us Dr. Santina West. She's the program director for the McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency at Northwestern Medicine, Delnor Hospital. Dr. Wheat, welcome to WGN.
Thanks. How are you doing today?
I am doing okay. Hey, that's really a great question. So for you, when you ask people, it's an entirely different context, right? Because it's like, oh, not good, right? A lot of times, you know, people are there for a reason.
Often, sometimes they're there for just preventative, which is my favorite. But yeah, sometimes it is a not so great reason that they're seeing me.
Well, it's still important to be able to touch on those, get some, you know, advice and inspiration on all things health. And you had a couple topics that we had talked about either off the air or Eli had shared with you, and one that a lot of people are talking about, and it's something that has a couple different contexts, whether it's Eric Dane, right, and suffering from ALS, and of course Steve McMichael, the beloved Hall of Fame Bear. It was something that he suffered with. It's a devastating disease. Obviously, there is no cure for it, at least in most situations, but it is kind of mysterious.
It absolutely is mysterious. Some people also know ALS as Lou Gehrig's disease, but ultimately it's just this disease where your muscles stop working and it really progresses over time. And then ultimately it's not just the muscles that you intentionally control, but those other muscles like swallowing and breathing that we really do need to live. And unfortunately it's a disease that just progresses in a fairly horrible way, unfortunately.
Yeah, everybody who hears about it, you know, it's one of those things. Oh geez, is there sort of a time frame that people should either look out for that or maybe worry about it more? I don't know that it affects kids that often. So is there maybe a time frame for it? And then what are, I guess, some of the symptoms or things that you could do?
Yeah, so it definitely is not something that we usually see in children. I will say middle-aged adults is where we are often seeing it, thinking like 40s, 50s, 60s even. And usually it starts with something sort of out of nowhere that you just feel like you can't control your legs or you can't control your arms. And it's really about the muscles where maybe you start falling, maybe your coordination starts going, and it just really does progress. And there's not a whole lot that we can do except for ensuring that you're still exercising, doing physical therapy and occupational therapy to help you continue to have control, and just really making sure that everyone around you understands what's happening.
I don't know that if there's a correlation with heredity. Maybe there is, but I don't know that it's a super strong correlation where you know, let's say like breast cancer or something, where people would be proactively doing things in order to try to prevent them from getting it themselves. It's one of those things. Dr. Wee, are there things that you can, I guess, do or not do that would lower your chances for ALS?
Honestly, not to my understanding. About 90% of it really is we don't know why people get it. There is some hereditary component for some people. That's only about 10% of people, according to some of the ALS websites. But most times we really just don't know. We do know that there's something that changes in the neurologic cells in our body that causes it, but we really don't know what's going on here.
Yeah. Here's the thing, too, that I think the reason that we hear about some of these people get things all over the place. It's something that happens. But the high profile nature of it allows me, you know, these are beloved, whether it's athletes or whether it's people from your favorite television shows and generally people that have access to good health care or resources. And if they can't do anything about it, then it really is one of those really scary things, right? Because it doesn't matter if you could afford the best procedure or maybe some new, you know, medication. It doesn't matter if you get it, it's pretty much going to progress.
That is absolutely true. It's one of the horrible things about this is that we really, like I said, we can do physical therapy, we can provide support to make people more comfortable, but there's not a whole lot else that we have available to help us in this one.
Dr. Wee, what's the typical timeline? And here's one thing that people have asked me too is, so you had mentioned you kind of just fall into a diagnosis, maybe something happens, but you may have had it for a while and just didn't notice it, or maybe the symptoms were kind of mild. So how long from the time that the person says, hey, I've got something, and I know the diagnosis isn't really something easy for everybody to do. I think it's a process even to come to that conclusion. And then what is the progression? Do people have? So Eric Dane, I think he lived, you know, from the time he announced it, we don't know when he was actually diagnosed. It was maybe, I don't know, like a year and a half or something. And Steve McMichael lived about maybe 3 years. I feel he was sort of on the longer end. It seemed like he was able to extend his situation. What is the thoughts there?
Yeah, so most often the average that we're seeing is that it probably doesn't get diagnosed until a year or even a year and a half until after those first symptoms start. Because some of those symptoms that, like I mentioned, aren't necessarily super specific. It's muscle weakness. But then once people do diagnose, it can progress sort of slowly for about a year where things sort of change slowly. But then it can move much more quickly. And unfortunately, if somebody is diagnosed later in life, then we seem to see it progress faster. But the average is about 3 to 5 years after diagnosis, though some people do live over 5 years, some people do live over 10 years.
Wow.
But it is really, it's really hard to guess how long someone is going to be impacted by this.
And correct me if I'm, Dr. Stephen Hawking, we all remember him. He's the guy in a wheelchair that had the robotic voice that was a genius but couldn't necessarily move. Did he have ALS, and was it the same variety that, let's say, Steve McMichael have? It just didn't progress the same way?
To be honest, I'm not sure. It sounds similar, but it's really hard to say. I'll have to look that one up.
Well, that's all of us, right? We're all trying to kind of learn and explore here. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want you to collect your thoughts a little bit on this, Dr. Weed. Is we had, you know, one of her friends' relatives passed away tragically. He was only 12 years old and had what felt like or seemed like cold symptoms. And it turned out to be, I think it was encephalitis or something, that, and she ended up passing away at the hospital for. And this is something that, you know, there are signs and there's symptoms a lot of times, especially now with cold and flu happening, you know, that maybe sort of mimic more typical things and people are slow to act on it. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on that when we come back from this break. So we're going to take a break here. We'll be back. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Dane in for Dean, continuing our conversation with Dr. Santina Wheat. She's the program director for the McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency, Northwestern Medicine, Del Nor Hospital. Dr. Wheat, before we get into the serious issues of the day, of course, it is National Margarita Day, and tequila itself is known as, I mean, Chris Chelios would be the first to tell you that you shouldn't overdo it, but if you're going to, you know, tequila is probably one of the healthier spirits that you can use.
I can't say anything one way or another about that. I'll just say if you're going to enjoy the margaritas today, make sure you alternate it with water so that you stay hydrated in the process.
Stay hydrated. I love that message. Before we went to the break, we had a tragedy that we were familiar with in our family, and it's got to be the kind of thing. I think I had heard about it before, but again, something that's sort of mysterious. And just your thoughts on that. You know, if this is happening maybe more this time of year, maybe it gets misdiagnosed more this time of year with the cold and flu symptoms, but we had someone pass and it was like viral encephalitis.
And I'm so sorry your family has experienced this. Encephalitis is a dangerous inflammation of the brain. And it's hard because it comes from other viruses usually. So sometimes we see it with, like a flu, you could get encephalitis. The one that I worry about a lot right now is the measles is known as a viral encephalitis. There's other diseases that are some of the mosquito illnesses or the tick illnesses that can also cause it. The biggest difference that we see with people that have encephalitis versus typical, maybe like cold or flu viral symptoms, is that the person that's experienced it is often confused. And so if it's somebody that you can't really arouse, if they, you can't really wake them up, or they seem confused, then that's when I really worry more that this is progressing, and we really want you to get not just to your doctor, but potentially to the emergency room so that they can really make sure that they're doing the right treatment.
We talked about the progression for Lou Gehrig's disease, which is, I guess, in the scope of things, pretty rapid and pretty fast. This is shockingly fast, right? This is something that you really need to sort of recognize those symptoms and get on it. As quick as, like, within hours, correct?
Yes. If you can get to treatment within hours, it can really be helpful. There are antiviral medications that we can use. There's steroids. Sometimes they can help protect the airway. But absolutely, when somebody has encephalitis, you might see them have seizures. Their behavior is strange. And recovery is really slow, but early treatment can help.
Okay. And then the age groups related, she was only 12 years old. Is that typical, or is there at a point where you sort of age out of having to be as concerned about it?
There is not an age when you age out. We sometimes see this in babies, unfortunately, which is hard because they don't really talk and tell you that they're confused. But so we see it with them. We can see it with teenagers. This is something that really can hit anybody. You can have it as an adult if you get a severe virus, particularly if you are immunocompromised. So unfortunately, this really does span the age range.
Wow. You know, so from negative things to properly managing good things, right? What is the best way? We've just got word, Eli just gave me the thumbs up, that the United States has won the gold medal in hockey. And so we know that there are going to be a lot of fans out there, just fans of America, right? Certainly hockey, certainly sports that are going to be celebrating. Like, what are some healthy ways that you can show your excitement around this Olympic gold medal?
I mean, I think that there are, you can always have parties, you can cheer, the people sharing the American flag to show our support around there. If you do go to parties and are indulging in different drinks or different things, I always will just say moderation along the way. Having healthy options while you're there too is a great way. I never will say don't enjoy things. Just make sure that you do it in moderation with a balance.
You can just jump around, right? You can just run around the room. I'm sure people fist pumping, maybe do some jumping jacks.
Also, enjoying those sports yourself, having the opportunity to go and try them out and experience them.
So, Dr. Wee, you are saying it. This moment right now with you on the air, this is going to be an inspiration. So many kids out there that were thinking, hockey, why would I do that? And it's a pretty aerobic sport. It's good for you. You got to be a good athlete and in good shape to do well at it. You're probably inspiring more people to take up sports in general because of this conversation.
I mean, even if you're not Olympic bound, having those sports, it's a great way to have fun with other people. It's a great way to stay healthy. Absolutely, we should all be out doing that.
I know you want to run around the room right now, and so we're going to let you get back to it. But before we let you go, give information about where people can get more information about the things happening at Northwestern, or maybe some links social media-wise, or how people can keep up with you.
You know, you can find me on Instagram with my name. It's not hard to find me. I go by Tina. But in general, with Northwestern, you can go to our Northwestern website and you can see all of the fun things that we're doing. If you're looking for somebody to take care of you as a physician or other care provider, you can find all of us on that website. And we are all here for you. We want to make sure you have the best health possible.
Yeah, I think the emergency room is going to be a pandemic of excitement and celebration coming in. So this could be an emergency of positivity. So, thank Dr. Wee. Thanks so much for jumping on.
Have a great week. Thanks for having me.
All right. So, Eli, this happened, correct? Thank you for, like, blurting in so that we could, because I think from a medical perspective, you know, because you get excited and you're going to do some things that could be a little bit crazy. But, you know, when you have that opportunity to be able to celebrate, you know, in a way that doesn't, you know, because people maybe, I don't know, they could be exploding thing. Who knows, right? People are going to be celebrating in a big way. This is huge.
Yeah, and what a way to start the morning. Not even 10 o'clock yet, and the United States has just won their 12th gold medal these Winter Olympics. We'll have a lot more with Tony and sports coming up in news. But what a moment for the Americans, having beaten Canada in overtime for their first gold medal in men's hockey since 1980.
Wow. Oh, man. I can't believe we Well, you were watching it the whole time. You were barely paying attention to things. You're like, hey, do you want the monitor on in the studio? I'm like, well, I kind of got to talk to Dr. Weed here. But, wow, that's exciting. Well, we're going to talk about that in little bits and pieces all along the way as we go on with the program. Coming up after the break, we're going to have Bo Kemp. So, Bo Kemp, if you know, for the John Williams Show and we've got the Wintrust Business Lunch. He's got First Million Mondays. And of course, he is the host of the First Million is Always the Hardest. Eli, you know, as a lucrative career in radio, you know that First Million for you is always going to be the hardest one. After that, they just kind of stack up and it becomes easy, right?
I mean, I got to get somewhere first, right?
Well, he's going to give a bunch of advice and inspiration. We'll be talking with him after the break. And then stay tuned, too, because coming up on the social media side, Jen Jolly, you know, one of the premier tech reporters on the Today Show. She does CES, of course, USA Today and all that. She's going to be talking about the social media trial that's happening right now. I know there's going to be a lot of social media positive stuff, talking about the gold medal and the hockey team. She is going to be talking with us. And then we are going to have Bill Curtis. So, Eli, are you familiar with Bill Curtis? Do you know who he is? I mean, obviously, as a media person, maybe he's kind of from another generation, but did you see Anchorman as a guy aspiring to work in sort of the news?
Anchorman is definitely a favorite of mine. I've loved those movies since I guess I was allowed to watch them as a kid. And I'm excited for that conversation.
Yeah. Oh, he's going to give a little insight, and not really much of it is helpful, Eli, I don't think, because he chalks it up to just raw talent and maybe incredible luck, right?
So being able to pick the brain of somebody like that is always valuable, though.
Yes. And we would ask him, too, is what he thinks about the Chicago Bears moving to Indiana. I know, and we'll ask maybe you and Tony can kind of weigh in a little bit on that. If the stadium was absolutely awesome, you know, Soldier Field has its challenges, and if it was big enough to be able to do some of the things that they should have built into the first one, where it can host, say, a Final Four, let's say a Super Bowl, let's say some of these other events, and build in things that the Bears deserve, like a Bears Hall of Fame, maybe an entertainment district. If you get a chance to go up to Green Bay, you get a chance to see kind of what you can do when you have full community support around a sports complex. Eli, have you been up to Lambeau Field at all? Have you ever been up there?
I have not been to the enemy territory yet, but it's definitely on my bucket list of stadiums to go to. I know it's a cathedral of football.
Yeah, I think just as a fact-finding mission, you should go up and see that. But what they have is that Hall of Fame, which is a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
The Bears, you know, one of the cornerstone franchises, maybe the cornerstone franchise of the NFL, more retired numbers than any other team, probably more residents of the Hall of Fame than maybe any other team. And, you know, they deserve really an adequate Hall of Fame that isn't just like a, you know, like a souvenir store in Soldier Field. So they'll be able to do those kind of things, plus that entertainment district where you can get down there and or over there in Arlington Heights and kind of celebrate and enjoy all that is, you know, let's say a Bears game where it's difficult. Soldier Field's a tough place to get to. Well, we're going to talk about all that. Lou Weisbach is going to be with us, kind of sharing his insights and inspirations there as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, keep it here. Bo Kemp joins us. It's Dane in for Dean, 720. WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane in for Dean here on a Sunday. A lot of things happening here, not the least of which is, of course, the Olympic men's hockey team winning the gold medal for the first time since 1980. So that is exciting. That is a certain kind of success. We all can't aspire to that, but we can aspire to be our best and be as successful as we can be. And we are lucky. We are privileged to be able to have Bo Kemp here within the WGN family. As, of course, you hear him on First Million Mondays with the Wintrust Business Lunch and John Williams. And, of course, First Million is always the hardest. Eli and I talked, Bo, we talked a little bit about that First Million. He, in the lucrative career of radio production, he's still trying to get that first hardest one, but he knows it's downhill from there once he gets it. Bo, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Dean. Great to be here, and we're going to do our best to help Eli along the way.
I think it's that kind of public service that you've been in and around your entire life. Talk a little bit about some of the background, some of the stuff that you do at SDA before you got here, and really have made your life's work trying to provide, whether it's instruction, inspiration, and education for people to succeed.
Thank you. I am the CEO of something called the Southland Development Authority. We're a relatively new not-for-profit that Tony Preckwinkle, President Preckwinkle, helped to formulate in order to focus on development and the opportunities in the south suburbs of Chicago. So think of everything that is outside of the city limits of Chicago, but all the way to the borders of Indiana and all the way out kind of west and south of the city. It's 45 cities, towns, and villages.
Wow.
So it's actually a big physical space. We've got over 700,000 people that we work with. So we're bigger in population than Baltimore, bigger than D.C., bigger than Boston in terms of people, just in the south suburbs alone of the Chicago area. And we've got this diverse mix of folks where we've got corn and soybean farms that are right next to sprawling suburban neighborhoods that are right next to, you know, to transit-oriented, connected, densely urban populations like in Harvey, for example. And that diversity means that we have to think differently about how we attract opportunities for economic development to the space.
So when you think about the opportunities that are there, one of the interesting things is everyone wants to sort of, whether it's control their own destiny or have some sort of role in trying to decide, you know, what they can do to be a success, and it's kind of giving people, empowering them with those tools is what you guys do.
Absolutely. And we were blessed, and at the same time, it was difficult because we started during COVID. And as an organization like ours, our goal is usually bring large companies in that are going to somehow bring thousands of jobs that are going to substantially increase, you know, the money in the people's pockets. But at that time in COVID, you couldn't do that, right? So we ended up having no choice but to focus on the businesses who were already operating in the Southland. And that turned out to be a blessing because we actually took the kind of typical economic development organization model and flipped it on its head and made our focus on those businesses who've already made a commitment, figuring out how do we help them get bigger? How do we help them get better? How do we help them hire people? How do we help them deal with their issues first, and then using recruitment kind of as a secondary tool afterwards?
Yeah, it's one of the things to kind of help businesses be better, move better. You try to maybe connect the dots on some opportunities for those existing businesses, which are so important to the workforce in those areas. Obviously, people work at places and then they shop at places, and you know, it all sort of is this cohesive unit. But you're also trying to get new people into the mix, people that have never been maybe an entrepreneur or a business owner, trying to get them involved and show them there's a role for them too.
You know, we have about 35,000 businesses in the South Suburbs, and we've had the opportunity over the course of the last 6 years to work with almost 12% of those businesses, which is a pretty substantial number in the grand scheme of things. About 2.5%, call it anywhere between 30 and 50 of those businesses at any given year, have real growth potential. And part of what we do is we service everybody from the person who has an idea for a business, how do we help them get started, to the solopreneur, the person who may be a lawyer or a tax professional who has their own practice and they're building their own business, making their own money, to those people who have a $2 million, a $20 million, and a $200 million business. We serve everything kind of along that spectrum. So we have very different services that we use depending on where you are kind of in your life cycle as a business.
You have, knowing a little bit about your background, you've got experience on the governmental side, on the support side, a little bit on the political side, certainly on the entrepreneurial side. And for the listeners to know, aspirational education side. So Bo is a Yale graduate with a Harvard MBA, right? So
That's
it's
right.
not just
That's
us
right.
that think, you know, obviously, academically super successful. But so how do you straddle that? Because in this day and age, maybe more than most, there's a lot of distrust between the general public and the government, whether it's distrust in motivations or maybe just in just dysfunction, right? Where
yeah.
how do you have to straddle that line to be able to work with and in and around the, you know, the apparatus of the government, but also, you know, build in a lot of the, you know, public private things that make it work?
You know, I grew up in an environment where I'd always wanted to be an entrepreneur. So I'd never seen myself doing anything that was not for profit or government related at all. That was not my intention. It's kind of by happenstance how we got there. And I think you may know the story, but I had a business in New Orleans, got washed away with Katrina. And I had what I thought was going to be 6 months for them to kind of clean the city back up and I'd relaunch my business. But in that time, I ended up working with someone who was running for mayor of Newark, New Jersey at the time, Cory Booker, and I ran his transition in the office, and then I went and ran the city. And what I got exposed to was, in short, how important government working well is for people who are working class and poor. You know, if you are middle class and above, you can often move around government because you can use your own personal resources to actually do things that you may need to do. But when you're working class or you're poor, you really are dependent on government working well. And once I got exposed, I also realized that there were a lot of the sorts of opportunities and techniques that I had learned from my time raising money for different businesses that were, you know, highly profitable financial businesses. There were things I'd learned in consulting that we could put in practice for cities. If we could just be creative, we can actually find solutions that are kind of public-private oriented, but feel a lot more like a for-profit business than a not-for-profit.
And creating some of those tools, not only for the communities to be able to utilize, but also people to be able to utilize as well and take, you know, it isn't always, you know, not always the best player is the best coach, right? So you have to take what it is that you do in practice and try to distill it down to something and build those educational pieces to be able to convey that and have it be something that other people can either learn from and benefit from. And that is First Million is always the hardest. That is the show. And of course, you've got the summit that is around that. We're going to talk about that as well. We'll talk about the show when we come back. We're going to continue our conversation with Bo Kemp. Keep it here. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane here with you high atop Chicago Skyline Studio in for Dean, and with us in studio, excited to have Bo Kemp. He is the host of The First Million is Always the Hardest, taking some of those lessons that he has learned, taking some of the successes and some of those best practices and kind of distilling them into teachable moments that we have right here on WGN. Bo, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So your thoughts on The First Million? First off, I love the name, yeah. Right? You know, but you see, because you got to build in some realistic difficulty, right, for that first million. But then right. There's that whole positive, brighter, like once you get the first one, then you're good to go. But the show has not only you sharing some of your thoughts and advice, but also highlighting a lot of great people, too, along the way.
Absolutely. You know, the show really isn't just about money. It's really about personal fulfillment, and it's the idea that compound interest, whether it's compound interest in working out or compound interest in money, goes a long way, but you have to start with the daily habits that move you in the direction of where you're trying to go, and that the process is the thing that actually brings you joy, and eventually you get to the outcomes. But if you just focus on I want to make $1 million and nothing else, even if you get there, you're not going to end up being happy, you know. And one of the things that we really try to show in the show is that there's lots of different ways to get to your first million. One of the things that we're really trying to promote right now is the idea of people buying businesses as opposed to just starting them from scratch. And a little statistic that a lot of people don't realize, roughly 80% of all new businesses fail within 5 years. But if you buy a company using the SBA 7A loan, less than 10% of those businesses purchased with an SBA loan fail. So if we can help you identify a company to buy and buy it using the SBA loan funds, the likelihood of you being successful is substantially higher than you starting a business from scratch.
And Bo, the reason for that, is it because the just whatever the financial structure just allows for more latitude on whether it's the finances or is it the amount of things that they will fund are just more likely to succeed?
It's a little of both, but it really boils down to the fact that in order to buy a business, a couple of things are true. First is that business has already been operating, has financials that allow you to be able to understand exactly how it makes its money, probably has some customer base, has an employee base. So it has a lot of the things that make a business work before you ever touch it.
Right.
So you're in a better position. Secondly, to point you made, the banks have higher restrictions around what they will or won't finance. So you're more likely to make a smart decision because the banks won't allow you to make a negative decision.
People get kind of caught up in the moment on the marketing side. I know that my wife has said, she's like, oh, we should open up a Dunkin' Donuts. I was like, well, who's going to work it? I just imagine myself in a paper hat handing out donuts. And I don't know.
Your wife might be right. Well, to say this on camera, you know?
Well, so the franchise model and my daughter Eleanor, her first job, she just started her job at Chick-fil-A, which is supposed to be a pretty good.
Great franchise if you can get it.
Yeah. So is that what you're talking about? Some of the franchises that are out there, or maybe some of the mom and pop businesses that may be just a great opportunity to hand that torch off?
You know, it's a range. So, franchises are great because in addition to the structure that a bank brings in terms of the financing, the franchise brings its own structure because they have operating models and systems and training and things that they do so that you're not guessing how to operate the business. They're going to tell you a large amount of the things that actually work. You'll fine tune it for your particular region, but they'll kind of make sure that you stay in the proper zone for operations. But we are financing people buying all types of businesses, and there's different reasons why people want to buy a business. If I wanted to be a restaurateur, It may be easier for me to buy a restaurant that's already fully built out than to start one from scratch. Often restaurateurs like to do their own thing in terms of the inside of the restaurant, so they tend not to do that. But it's actually not a bad idea to start that way. If you are, let's say, a person who does taxes, you might actually buy two or three other people's tax businesses because what you're acquiring there are their clients. Mm. You may not need their staff, but you need their clients. Some people do what they call an acqui-hire, meaning that they buy a company for the staff itself, because recruiting skilled staff, particularly in things like manufacturing.
So instead of headhunting, you just like, we're taking everybody.
Buying the company, right? Mm. But we also work with people who are looking to buy $10, $20 million businesses. We are right now engaged with someone who's looking to buy a trucking business on top of the existing trucking business that he has, people who are interested in buying clean storage businesses, folks that are interested in acquiring a $20 or $30 million business in the food space, which happens to be a key industry in the area that we're in. So it's a broad range of the type of people we work with.
Yeah. In addition to the show where you have some of those best practices, some of those inspirational stories, to have that there, you also have created, you know, it's one thing for people to say like, okay, I'll go to a website or I'll try to figure it out, or maybe I'll try to get with Bo independently, but you've got the Achieve Summit. And this is something you did last year, and it's exciting to have it be able to head into the next year bigger and better. And it's an opportunity for people to get together sort of in one kind of ecosystem and not only learn, but succeed.
Absolutely. So the goal is to take our entrepreneurship through acquisition work, which is called ETA. That's where we're helping people buy businesses and help them do that kind of online and educate them and build an online community. But it's equally important that we have a place in real life, as they would say, IRL, where people get together and create a marketplace. We actually are looking to develop those companies that want to sell in the next 1 to 3 years to bring them to the Achieve Summit and to bring people who are interested in buying those businesses from not just the region, but all around the country. One of the ways that we get new people to move to this area is presenting them opportunities to buy the existing businesses that are already here. Those assets are placed here, so the likelihood that they pick them up and move is a lot less. But we can recruit people from around the world and show them why this is the area that makes the most sense for them to be in. The Achieve Summit, which is going to be at Wind Creek Casino, June 4th through 6th, is going to be a phenomenal opportunity for anyone who's just interested in learning how to buy a business. Someone who already owns a business and wants to grow, or someone who has a business and wants to sell their business and are trying to figure out, how do I get the most value out of my business before I retire and move to Florida, which is what everybody seems to do. But
well, on a day like today.
Yes.
Right. You're definitely, like, and we'll definitely be hearing a lot more about that here on WGN Radio. As we get closer to it, we'll have links up for all of that as well. One of the things that I think is just so, regardless of whether you're ready to buy a business or ready to make that sort of move in your life, is just some of these, you know, a lot of times it's people are in their own way and they create their own obstacles, and you have a lot of sort of teachable, inspirational things, easy things, right? If you just sort of change your perspective and the way you think.
You know, one of the podcasts, The First Million is Always the Hardest. Really, the inspiration behind that podcast is to be in a mode where we get to share and teach with people all of the various techniques that are necessary to do and be the success in life that they want, not just in business and not just on the financial side. There are five objections that most of us have for almost everything that we do: time, money, fear, doubt, and our relationship with our partner. And that partner could be someone I take care of, but it could also be my person I'm married to. It could be a business partner. It's a wide variety of things. And in the podcast, we really talk specifically about, what do I do to actually make sure that I overcome each of those five objections, not in a way that is kind of fanciful, but in a way that's practical, so that you can actually apply that to anything that you want to do in life going forward.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things is a lot of, you know, it's like, what are you going to do, whether it's for your vocation or dollars, but a lot of happiness isn't necessarily attached. It's hard to believe. I know Eli's thinking like, that's not true. Right. It's not always attached to dollars. It's maybe it's attached to independence, doing what you want, feeling fulfilled, right? And that could take on a lot of different forms. Again, we'll have links up at WGNradio.com. And Bo, before we let you go, give information where people can go to either connect with you or social media.
Absolutely.
Where they can go.
Please go to southlanddevelopment.org. That's one place you can go to. You can also go on Spotify, YouTube, or Apple Podcasts for The First Million is Always the Hardest podcast is available for us. And we'd love to have you come to the Achieve Summit. So you can go to the southlanddevelopment.org website for Achieve Summit and sign up there to attend the Achieve Summit June 4th through 6th at Wind Creek Casino.
And, of course, WGNRadio.com for that as well. Thanks, Bo. I appreciate all the inspiration, everything that you're doing. Look forward to exciting things coming up.
Thank you for having me.
We are going to take a break, and when we come back, legendary newsman, voice, personality, just kind of a force of nature, Bill Curtis is going to join us. So we are going to be excited to talk with him when we come back from this break. Plus, I'm sure we'll be celebrating the Olympic gold medal for the men's hockey team. A lot of exciting things are happening. I'm getting a lot of Eli spoiler alert texts, but I think in this day and age, how could you avoid it, right? Is like, are people supposed to just hide? And they would have found out at some point.
You would have found out anyway.
Oh, I feel a little guilty. I'm sorry, people, but I'm excited. All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, high atop Chicago in the Skyline studio, and honored to have on the line legendary news icon, blockbuster movie voice, beloved in Chicago and nationwide, and now author of the new best-selling book, Whirlwind My Life, reporting the news, the one and only Bill Curtis. Welcome to WGN.
Thanks, Dane. I love that. Skylight Studios. Jeez.
Well, we used to be right on street level Michigan Avenue, and the way I describe it, now we're in this building that overlooks Navy Pier. It's like going from a castle to a spaceship. Both are cool, but very different.
Well, and a great way to spend the winter months, summer, spring, and fall. You know, you're just overseeing your empire.
We mentioned in the intro, you know, beloved in Chicago and, you know, Chicago's very own. We consider you a Chicagoan. But, of course, you know, whether it's with A&E or Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, or obviously Anchorman, you're really the world's Bill Curtis at this point. What are your thoughts about that, that Chicago's kind of taken ownership of you?
You know, I've spent about 50 years here. People all think, oh, he must live in New York. Oh, no, in L.A. Well, I lived in New York for 3 years, L.A. for 3 years, but I always came back to the Midwest. And you'll find that, you know, this is home, this is comfortable. And the others have their negatives. So I'm glad to call this home.
What is it, Bill, about the Midwest that just makes it so, I think, maybe relevant or acceptable or just for the rest of the country? Because, you know, Kansas roots, right there in the Midwest. Midwest nice people are super accommodating and non-regional diction, right? We've got that as well. Like, so talk about that, the Midwest roots and how it really translated to national presence for you.
Well, Chicago is a little bit bigger Kansas. It is. That's the Midwest, and it's there. Everybody's friendly. You know, you don't have the in New York. You have very short tempers, especially getting into the cabs. You know, once you get past that, why, they're friendly too. But it's that initial impression. And in L.A., I used to say everybody's thinking of the next job they want, and you know, out there working. You know, in our business competitively. So any openings are going to go down to an audition. In New York, roughly the same thing. You're always looking for the deal around the corner. But here, we live to work. We enjoy the work. And so whenever I wanted to go to, let's say, Vietnam or Ireland, you know, for the troubles over there, and I started first right here because there is usually a connection. Well, Iran, I had a connection with a doctor, and we got right into the Revolutionary Guard in 80, you know, when they were just having their revolution. And, you know, they have all the contacts, and they're happy to see you, but you need that door opener. And this is the quickest way to cover an international story that I know of.
When you think about you and the career and the talent, and obviously it seems almost like it was undeniable, like it was going to happen for sure. I love in the book how you talk about just circumstances, sort of just whether it's coincidences, whether it's just things that happen that have taken your life and trajectory in different directions, you know, originally with the tornado and everything related to that. There's been a lot of things that people would say, right place, right time and all that. Just your thoughts on that, because not only to have that happen, I think everyone can point to points in their life, but to really recognize it, that your life has been kind of going in its own direction based on these amazing occurrences.
Well, the guy who set me straight or on the path to interpreting it that way was Mortimer Adler, who was the chief editor of the Great Western Books at the University of Britannica and the University of Chicago. And he said, you know, to be successful, you have to have luck. Whoa, that hit me right between the eyes. Luck? You mean here you are, PhD, you know, in the best universities, you know, in the world. I said, what do you mean by luck? And I followed him actually out to Aspen to ask it a second time. And he said, well, I'll tell you a story. When I got my PhD, I was about 25, 26. In New York, I went to a cocktail party. And at the cocktail party, another young man came up and he said, hi, my name is Robert Hutchin. And what are you? Well, I'm Mortimer Adler. And what are you? And Hutchin said, well, I'm the new dean of the University of Chicago Law School. And Mortimer said, oh, then you're not educated. And he said, what do you mean? What do you mean? He said, you know, no one is educated until they're familiar with the works of the Western civilization. And of course, we all now take that course in school. And Hutchins kind of was taken back. They left, and in a month, he wrote Mortimer to say, I've just been named chancellor at the U of C. Why don't you come back here and join me, and we'll be educated together. And it hit Adler so hard, you know, that he said, if I hadn't gone to the cocktail party, my whole life would be different. But it changed with one word. One, you know, you can't count on that. Like the tornado, you can't count on five words of warning that I gave there right after I was filling in part-time that would lay out the path for 60 years of a career. You can't count on that because you don't know. Was it God's will? Was it just some natural rule that is playing? No, I think what we have to draw from that is that, yeah, you need an education. Yes, you need to explore the experience, every experience that you have. But your mind has to stay open for the unexpected. And use your imagination. Use all these things that you have prepared for and make the most of it.
Well, you mentioned the word prepared, isn't it? Like opportunity meets preparation. You have to be in that place in your life, whether it's in your own mindset or whatever kind of capabilities you have to take advantage of it and really be in there and make something of it. So in the book, you have, you know, a bunch of different chapters that kind of highlight all the different things. And it's just fascinating the way that you've transcended, you know, not only some of these amazing events, and in the world of news, this is not something that you can plan for. You can plan even for a career to say like, well, this is what I want to do. If I run into this guy, well, wow, this would be a great person to, you know, say this to. But in news, it just happens and you have to be there. And with some of these big stories, talk about the ones, maybe a couple that, you know, just stand out. I'm sure there's so many, right? And then the ones that you thought were important enough to add to the book.
Well, I've got a good example. I was in Vietnam, following up on the Agent Orange story that I broke here with my little unit. And I look down at the curb, and there is a woman, and next to her is a child. The child must be 9. And the child looked like wide eyes, olive skin, certainly not Vietnamese. And I said, is his father an American MP? And she said, but I can't talk. They watch us. I said, oh, my God, in a flash, this is what happened to 8,000 of these Amerasian children who were left behind when the Americans pulled out in 75 so fast. And a lot of them were citizens. What happened to the children, the orphans of Vietnam? Well, what do you do? We videotaped 50 letters from the parents who were kind of waiting for us when we came out of the hood because we were the first Americans back and they wanted to say, hey, we want to go home, our fathers. So put them on videotape. And then they said, we know you had the letters and we don't, we advise you can't go through customs. You know, they'll take everything and maybe you too. And when the handler comes to the door, knocks on the door, good morning, how are you? He said, do you have the letters? He said, I certainly do. And handed him most of the letters. There were about 100. I kept one and put it down with my photographs. And I used the old Chicago trick. Here are the letters, and here's $100 for you. made him rich. And at 6 weeks, we get a call in the newsroom, and our telephone operator said, yells across the newsroom, Bill Curtis, the New York Times for you on one. Well, I was both embarrassed and thrilled. And she said, Mr. Curtis, yes. Did you send us an article on spec, 6 weeks ago about the Vietnamese American Amerindian children? I said, well, yes, I did, sheepishly. And she said, well, we want to put it on the cover. Oh, my God. It was one, if not the highlight of my journalistic career because, this is the mountaintop. And learned an awful lot in preparing it. It hit the cover. I still have it framed on the wall.
Wow.
Now, was that luck or was that taking advantage of the opportunity?
We're going to continue our conversation with Bill Curtis, author of Whirlwind, My Life Reporting the News. When we come back, keep it here. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it is Dane in for Dean here and continuing our conversation with broadcasting legend, I like to say Chicago's very own, but the world's very own, Bill Curtis. He is the author of Whirlwind, My Life Reporting the News. And Bill, we talked about it. News is serious business, and obviously nobody did it better than you, but then you kind of transcended into a voice for so many brands. Also like Wait, Don't Tell Me. And of course, the blockbuster voice behind that huge Hollywood hit, Anchorman. So when you got a chance, I've known you for many, many years, and your funny side is such a big part of who you are. Did you see Anchorman as one of those? It's like, hey, wow, I finally got an opportunity to show my funny side.
No, I thought I was throwing my career away. I was half retired and doing my own thing with the documentaries and talked to Donna, my wife, about it. We called Harold Ramis and said, hey, these guys, it's their first movie. Adam McKay and Will Ferrell, is it a bomb? Because I don't want to have my tombstone with only one word on it, Anchorman. And they said, we don't know. Nobody knows, when a movie's going to be a hit. So, it's a chance. So I think my sense of humor got the best of me. I was reading in an audition piped in from Chicago to Universal City and didn't know that Judd Apatow was there and Adam and Will and God knows how many they had. And there's I wanted to hear the audition. Now, here's the guy who's going to lead the movie. Is he any good? And with every sentence, I laughed, and it was so pleasant for them because they hadn't really heard anybody in a cold read react that way to their script, and they said, well, he's our guy. That's great fun. Well, it turns out to be this enormous hit, especially for a younger generation, some who had seen it 13 times. And here we are, we're years down. It was 2004, and it is still a big. And so it was fun to do. I'm glad I did it.
Oh, no, it is great. I'm sure people come up to you and share lines about it when they do see it, with it as well. And all of those stories, you could never fit the entire career into this, but so many great ones are in Whirlwind, My Life Reporting the News by Bill Curtis. So, Bill, where can people get it? I'm guessing a lot of the normal places, but do you have specific ones you prefer for the book?
Well, Amazon is the easiest. We have an audio book. I say for anybody who can't read, here's an audio book that I read. And that's the easiest place, but Barnes & Noble and at a bookstore near you is the cut line. So, it's really funny, just quick, how saturated the movie is. And is how many people will you read, let's say, this line and ask, what do you think of when you hear, there was a time, a time before cable, when only men read the news, and in San Diego that man was Ron Burgundy, that they don't laugh.
So good.
They'll know it.
it's so good. And so when you see things like The Daily Show and just what that has been, where they have sort of a news feel, but certainly the humor side of it, do you ever think, hey, if I was born in a different generation, I might have gravitated towards one of those? Just your thoughts on that style and just the place it has now?
Well, it's coming to, well, a good way, wait, don't tell me. That's a news quiz. So the team, the writers, you know, spend all their time exploring the internet and these weird stories that they can then use for the quiz. I don't do that. I come in and I'm the straight announcer and scorekeeper, and I'm having the most fun, I think. Would I go deeper? I'm not sure. You know, that's not really me. I'm still the reporter.
Yes.
Straight up, but I sure enjoy a good laugh.
Well, people love seeing you, and of course, this is a great reason to get out and do the book. Are there any, you know, book signings or anything? Obviously, you know, we would, you know, share here at WGN Radio. We'd love to support in any way. We reach 38 states in Canada, just a huge signal. So anywhere in the Midwest.
I know you do. A big 50,000 watt Clear Channel. I just had a run down Kansas. They deserve it, University of Kansas. But locally, you know, it's fresh. So whoever wants to see it can Google it.
Well, I love it. Well, just keep us posted. Obviously, we'll have links up at WGNradio.com for all of it. I cannot tell you just how great it is to talk to you again, Bill. So excited about the book. I know you're excited to be able to share it and all of those, just the in-depth way that you can share those amazing and iconic stories. And thanks so much for jumping on the show today.
You're very good. And you read the book. He read the book.
Woo! 720 at WGN. It is Dane in for Dean. And it is a great Sunday morning. Sundays are always great, no matter what. At least they should be. And then when you can add an Olympic gold medal to it, it makes it even better. And when you can add this next guest to it, it makes it even better. Excited to have on the world's top tech personality. You, of course, see her on the Today Show, New York Times, USA Today, right here on WGN Radio's host of Techishly Jen. It's the one and only Jennifer Jolly. Jen, well, happy birthday, number one, and welcome to WGN.
Thank you so much, Dane. You just gave me the best birthday present ever with that introduction. Thank you. It is my absolute pleasure to be here.
Wow. Woo. So here's the thing. And I mean, heavy is the crown as the top tech person. And we even kind of promoted you as not only of the world, but maybe intergalactically, because I don't know that anybody's come out and challenged you for that sort of universal dominance on the tech side. But it isn't always about the next great gadget or some improvement. Sometimes there's sort of serious business, and no better person to share their thoughts on it and the perspective. And with the media, the social media trial that's happening, it's bringing a lot of things that a lot of parents are concerned about into the news.
Yeah, this is our generation's big tobacco moment. So Mark Zuckerberg, YouTube, the C-suite at YouTube, they are on trial in Los Angeles right now. And it's not necessarily about a lawsuit. The lawsuit is a 20-year-old woman suing Meta and Google, claiming that Instagram and YouTube were engineered to addict her as a child. But deeper, like this whole big can of worms here, what's really at issue here is what these tech leaders, you know, what big tech knew and what they've done on purpose. Basically, the Section 230 that they're all revisiting here is whether they made a defective product, knowing that it could change how a generation of kids see themselves. And addiction conversation, not necessarily around screen time numbers, but the fact that they use the smartest psychologists in the world to create basically these little mini slot machines. And then when, you know, then they did these things like parental controls that parents thought would really work and they didn't. And they, you know, what did they know? When did they know it? how much have they lied about it? And you know, the way that we're seeing sort of the big tobacco playbook play out in this trial right now in 2026 is kind of amazing.
Yeah, it's, I mean, you think about it, is it a defective product or is it, you know, an ultra effective product? And that's really the question, is like, is it, you know, obviously you want people to like what it is that you're doing. But, you know, if there's these unintended consequences, or if there are things that they know and they forego, you know, whatever negatives might be out there, whether it's, you know, mentally or physically, for the sake of we're guessing it's profit, right? We're not even applying that. Yeah. There's some sort of nefarious intent, but it's just like, how much can you be the smartest people in maybe the world in a lot of ways creating these products, but then also, like, you know, where you can make ignorance your defense, saying like, well, we had no idea, and when we did, we tried to put these things in place. It reminds me of maybe like a public service announcement. You mentioned the tobacco correlations for tobacco, saying, well, tobacco's bad for you. Well, everybody kind of knows that going in, and it's not necessarily exactly the same, where I think we could all agree that it's pretty obvious that breathing, you know, in a room full of smoke and cancer is pretty bad. This is a lot more mysterious and ambiguous, but I think, you know, just as important that this conversation is happening.
Well, the excuse is that, well, you know, there's a high bar for demonstrating harm, and the restrictions are paternalistic and overbearing. This is what Mark Zuckerberg himself testified in court. But that excuse is getting really old, because we've seen time and time and time again that Meta's research, their own research, proved that their product was harming children. Their beauty filters were harming children. It's not a way that people are using the app problem. It's not a, hey, where were the parents and why did they let their kids on these devices so long problem. It's a design problem. And that's what this case is arguing. The Instagram itself, the infinite scroll, the autoplay, the beauty filters is a defective product that the company knew it and pushed it anyway to 9-year-olds. That, you know, we have mountains of evidence, internal documents, 6,000 pages of internal documents, where all of these people are raising red flags. And Mark Zuckerberg says, well, yeah, but, well, you know, it's about free expression. You know, when did that become code for keeping the features that keep kids hooked? And we're not pushing them to 13 like they're supposed to wait until they're 13 to use the app. We're starting them at 9. We want them up to 46 minutes a day by 10.
Yeah. Oh, it's so bad. You know, and our kids do, I mean, they participate in some of these things too. It's weird. And, you know, and that whole, I really appreciate the, you know, just the comparisons to the tobacco side, where you had back in the day, you know, society was also helping to push all of that stuff, where it was considered, you know, cool to smoke cigarettes, right? Even though it's bad for you, but it was still considered society cool. Maybe your peer group or peer pressure might get you. And there's a lot of people, this is way back in, I don't know, because you used to see it in movies, and, you know, cigarette smoking was prominent. Or you even have doctors would be like, well, what after a big heart surgery? I relax with a Lucky Strike. I mean, you used to be able to have, which just sounds so crazy now.
Mom's nerve when she's, you know, pregnant and not nursing her child because formula was better. You know, when you know better, you're supposed to do better, right?
But now you have, it's similar on the society side, where you have, you know, whether it's the peer groups or whether it's even the parents, like every kid has a phone right now. And every kid, you know, is participating, and so you don't want them to not participate if everybody else is doing it. And you really have to. And plus, a lot of these negatives, I think, are getting brought out now, and we'll be able to kind of see, you know, what is out there and what kind of damage it's doing, because a lot of times it's mysterious as well. Not everything is to the extreme of maybe some of the news stories where you hear people being, I think everybody's negatively affected to some extent. Not everybody is committing suicide or peer pressure gets to that point. Well, we're going to talk about that in just a sec. Well, actually, we're going to wait for Eli to come back. But your thoughts on that, Jen, just the fact that, you know, society and parents, they're sort of, everybody's kind of pulling each other along to participate. It isn't just the apps.
Yeah, it's really, really hard. And we have a lot of podcasts coming up around, you know, here are the excuses that kids use. Here are the excuses that other parents use. We're seeing entire communities of parents come together and band together and say, look, we are not going to let our kids get on to these devices until later. We're going to start with training wheel gadgets. Just like nobody's handing a cigarette to a 9-year-old, we got to stop handing these, you know, all access slot machines to 9- and 10-year-olds. And, you know, we're finding, I posted, and again, Dane, the irony is not lost on me. I posted about this on Instagram, but I did the, here's what tobacco did then in the late 90s. Here's what the social media companies are doing now in 2026. And it's just, it's gone viral because it's wild how many similarities there are. You know, YouTube saying the goal is not viewership, it's viewer addiction. You know, it's the struggle is more real than any of us realize.
Before we go to break, and of course, we're going to come back and talk about Techishly Jen and how you're, you know, some of the episodes are addressing some of this stuff, plus all a lot of cool things as well. But Mark Zuckerberg, a guy that's, you know, created one of the most powerful connecting communication tools, but I think admitting, and you've interviewed him before, he's not a great communicator. Mm-hmm. Do you think he leans into that he's just not very good at this, and maybe that helps him sort of run out the clock in court?
Well, the first time I interviewed Mark Zuckerberg was in 2010, and that guy then, and then, you know, kind of touched base with him along the way for the past many, many years. And I've watched him get slicker, get more media trained, get more. I mean, his testimony in court last week was really, look, that nothing can touch me. I'm going to move fast. I'm going to break things, and you can't touch me because under the current administration, I've got carte blanche to make my company more money. There is no rules for me. That we even saw that his security team wore Meta Ray-Ban AI glasses into the courtroom. It is completely illegal in a federal court to wear the glasses to record anything. The judge was not amused. But again, it's that pattern of we are going to push up against the line over and over and over again and hope nobody notices. At the same time, Dane, this is insane. Meta just said, hey, we're going to work on AI facial recognition in these glasses. The same thing that got them fined for $2 billion just 5 years ago. And they said in May 2025, we're going to launch this facial recognition during political chaos when civil society groups are too busy to fight us. So this is about so much more than this one trial. And it's really about what's happening to us and what choices we make about our autonomy and how we're going to move forward in this next 10 to 20 years with technology.
With all the things that you see in your perspective, I love to see it with Techishly Jen, where you're able to take up those long form conversations and share your thoughts, having all of that perspective and seeing it all happen and extending beyond just all the great products. We're going to take a break, and we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Jen Jolly. Keep it here. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane in for Dean until 1 p.m. today, continuing our conversation with the number one tech personality in the world. You see her on every platform that matters, whether it's the Today Show, of course, USA Today, and of course, most importantly, as the host of Techishly Jen right here on WGN Radio. Jen Jolly, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. I just texted you during the break that we need to do a whole hour of this on Techishly Jen. It is so much fun to talk with you. I just love it. You're such a pro. It's so great.
Okay, well, thank you, right? But let's not take time away from that to kind of figure out some of the things we're excited about. I've known you for many years, and I was excited to be able to put together, to help us kind of combine and create that platform where you could share more than just, you know, the 2 minutes that you have that people love and obviously you're so known for on, like, the, you know, the gadgets and the tech and the advancements, because you have so much more to share and offer. And it's things like this, it's situations like this where you have that very unique perspective, not only with the technology, but with the people behind it and driving it to share, I think, just important news.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, geeky on the spectrum, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, some kind of on the spectrum, meeting him, and wow, he was so awkward. And he really did think he was going to democratize the sharing of information. But when was the last time that social media felt good? When was the last time we weren't sucked into it completely and lost hours of our time? And, you know, it's really algorithmically, I think about this all the time. If you're not paying for something, you're not getting a product. You are the product.
Wow.
And the people making money off of you are the Mark Zuckerbergs, the Elon Musks, the Sam Altmans of the world. And that is really creepy when you sit back and you think about who runs the world. And it's these guys. And, you know, you can't, there's no morality in these algorithms. You know, they're not saying, hey, we're going to make sure we push the content to you that's good for you, that's the best for you, that's going to leave you feeling fulfilled. And I'm doing this podcast right now about, dang, we are all so addicted to our smartphones right now. Like, why and how has this happened at this moment in our lives? But we realized, I sat down, I opened up my screen time last week. I think maybe I'm on social media for 30 minutes to an hour every day at different times of the day because it's part of my job, right? Jane, I had 11 hours of screen time on average last week. Me and my smartphone spent 11 hours a day together. And guess what? The average American will spend 25 to 33 years of their lifetime engaging with their smartphone. I moved my parents in with me a year ago. That's time I'm not spending with my parents. I'm not spending with my husband. I'm not spending with my two horses and two dogs. That just upsets me. It strikes me to the very core of my being. This isn't what I want to choose for my life.
Well, you have it. At least you have it as your job in trying to, you know, help make the world a better place and inform people as at least your excuse, whereas, you know, the kids of America don't have that, right? It's just the algorithm that kind of makes them get in there. Just your thoughts on this as we kind of make those comparisons. And I think it's so important to the tobacco side of things is that, you know, whenever you bring in, which I think this conversation has in court, is the medical community, right? Which has that do no harm. They have sort of that overriding, like, higher purpose to help and be helpful. It isn't just an economic bottom line. It's to bring them in. You know, you don't have, you know, cancer and tumors and necessarily your death involved, but you do have this, you know, the mysterious, you know, mental health side of things. Do you think, Jen, that that's part of maybe addressing it in a healthier way is having at least doctors or the medical community weigh in on this? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when we look at how these companies have done what they've done, Dr. Anna Lemke at Stanford, she testified and I reached out to her and she's coming on the podcast as soon as the trial is over. But you're, especially with kids, the developing brains are made for the phone functions at a neurological level. So memory, navigation, time, social connections, kids, elderly, their brains are literally restructured around engagement with our phones. And it's when you dive into that medical side, that psychological side of things, you're looking at things like your dopamine baseline shifting, things that used to feel pleasurable, a walk, a conversation, a quiet moment, start to feel flat because your brain has recalibrated to expect the intensity of that social media feed. So we're looking at what these companies knew, how they've done what they've done to get to the point that we are today. And where is the accountability? Like with tobacco, you know, I posted something where the tobacco C-suite folks are up there and they're just lying about, no, I wouldn't call it addiction. Like, we can argue all day about the word addiction, right?
It's crazy. So, Jen, in about the minute or so that we have left, and of course, WGN Radio, yeah. .com and for Techishly Jen, you know, give the information maybe on the next podcast. We got like about a minute, and of course, places where people can find you in all different kind of incarnations.
We spoke with Jonathan Haidt, author of The Anxious Generation, Catherine Price, author of How to Break Up with Your Phone. They have a new book out called The Amazing Generation, really how to work with kids starting at the age of 8 all the way up to deal with, you know, when is the right time to give my kids a cell phone? What do I need to know as a parent? That's amazing. We have a podcast coming out on, you know, this whole idea that we're really addicted to our screens, what that means, and how to, I always give you the, okay, we know that we feel like crap and here's why, and now here's what we can do about it. Your brain wants to heal. It can do that in 72 hours of pulling back from the feed. We talk about the real news that you can use to get through this. And we also talk about, of course, because I review tech for a living, some of the cool stuff that I'm checking out, what it means, how it feels, how it might work better in your life than maybe some of the other things that you have right now. What's worth spending your really hard-earned money on and why?
We'll have links up at WGNradio.com for all of it. Techishly, Jen, right here at WGN. Jen, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Celebrate responsibly for the gold medal, and thanks for jumping on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. And, hey, stay warm out there, you guys. Good day to curl up by the fire with a good book, loved ones, and celebrate my birthday with me, woo-hoo! No matter where you are.
All right. Yeah. Happy birthday. Thanks, Jen. All right, we are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have Brett Penninger and some of the inspiration that he has around his new book. And, of course, we're going to talk Beat the Streets Wrestling, big wrestling supporter, and some of the intangibles and positives that it can bring to your life and kids as well. So keep it here. Dane and Ferdin, 720 WGN. Feels very Olympic-y. I don't know if that's even a word. 720 WGN, it is Dane in for Dean until... One, and on the athletic and inspirational side and the positivities of outcome and great examples of excellence, it is always good to shine a light on people making a difference in a big way. And, of course, if you know the show, you know that we support the wrestling community. Dan Gable's a pretty regular guest on the show, as well as other personalities in and around the wrestling world. And excited to have on Brett Penninger. And he is not only a driving force for Beat the Streets, which is a great program. He's going to fill in the listeners, you know, a little bit on that and what it does, but it's a great opportunity for kids to get in, you know, and learn to wrestle for sure, but also so many positive outcomes and influences there. And then as the author of Larger Than Life, In Pursuit of Discovering Your Full Potential, anytime you can have people aspire to get better and have people giving them the tools to do it is great. So Brett, welcome to WGN.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Super excited today.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about your background, too. So you were you're a wrestler, right? You were in the world of wrestling, and our background. You know, so we did some high school wrestling. My kids wrestled and all that. And I have always believed that even as people go and whether it's job interviews or some of those other things, is that, and you can be involved in sports, and whether it's leadership or teamwork, you know, the things that sports, I think, generally connects you on. But those people that are wrestlers, I think there is just another level of whether it's dedication, commitment, perseverance, maybe tolerance for the uncomfortable, right? Either way, just your thoughts on wrestling.
Oh, you bet. Well, wrestling is the world's oldest and greatest sport. I might be biased, but I tell you what, you are in the wrestling family if you've done it for at least a month. And one of the things you learn really quickly is the commitment that it takes, because it's so darn hard to then be able to go against another opponent, everything that it takes to be in the type of conditioning that's needed for that, which is different than running, it's different than football, it's different than just about any other sport that you can name. And so it really creates a resilience, a strength, and really a mindset that sets wrestlers apart from just about any other athlete on the planet.
Do you feel that, you know, and maybe you would be biased, obviously, because of your background, but, you know, if people are looking for, in the corporate world, you talk about people trying to achieve their potential, oftentimes that's maybe in career or whatever kind of, you know, goals that they may have, is that when you see wrestling, and I don't know how it would always make its way onto a resume, but if you see that as far as the background, what does that mean to you?
What it means is they're tough. And when I mean tough, not just physically, you know, that's just one aspect of it, but they're tough because they're able to push past the limitations that most people capitulate at. They just stop. I mean, wrestling is during a season when everybody else is eating and having a great time during Christmas and Thanksgiving, and wrestlers are the ones who do not get to partake in that like everyone else as a normal person. So, you got a wrestler on a resume, and you know that. You know there's somebody who's going to be able to put up with a lot of stress and pain in some cases in order to get on the other side successfully.
It's one thing to, and I think the state tournament for IHSA state tournament happened this weekend, right? So there was a lot of people and a lot of families out there that were heading down to Champaign or participating in that. And I know we've got the team championships for state are coming up in Bloomington next week. So it's kind of right in that time where a lot of people are thinking about it. And high school wrestling is one thing, but to get to the point where you were a Division I wrestler at the University of Wisconsin, who always has a pretty competitive team, you know, that's another level.
It is, especially back then. I was in school in the mid-80s, almost 84 to 89. And at that time, Wisconsin was absolutely one of the top schools in the country, developing a lot of, you know, national champions, world medalists, world champions. So it was a powerful time. And they're still very dominant in the Big Ten, which is the best wrestling conference in the entire planet. So it was a really special time period, and I'm really honored to have been a Badger.
Yeah, our producer, Eli Burke, in addition to being just super great here at WGN Radio, also works for the Big Ten Network. So I saw him nod in concurrence with some of that stuff.
Only the best are in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Amen.
There you go. And so these things, you know, start at an early age. Some people start pretty young. And when it comes to Beat the Streets, you know, give the listeners a little background on that program. There are programs around the country for Beat the Streets. Chicago has a really robust presence within that. And I like to think of it as, you know, like those programs that you might have where it's basketball leagues that are there for the purpose of, you know, helping, you know, mentor kids, giving them some things to do on the athletic side. Talk about Beat the Streets.
Beat the Streets is, Beat the Streets Chicago especially, is the best wrestling program I've ever seen. I worked at the Olympic Training Center from 93 to 2000, part of the 96 Olympic Games. And so I know what a really great wrestling program looks like, including at the high school level, collegiate, and internationally. Beat the Streets is the best that I've seen of all of them.
Wow.
Here in Chicago. I say that, you know, not out of hubris, but because of what we've been able to accomplish here in serving kids all throughout the city, being able to take them in places that they've never gone before, in other countries, taking our teams so that they can travel and get an experience. Because a lot of the kids that we deal with, you know, they don't get outside of Chicago, let alone into another state and into another country. Our kids are really special. You know, they work their butts off. And it's not just about wrestling. We use wrestling and the lessons that it teaches in order for them to be successful human beings, period.
So describe some of those, like how people would get involved. Is it the kind of thing where, you know, it's happening in whether it's maybe approaching people in the schools, or is it maybe more community organizations? How do you, you know, because not everybody is maybe in tune or aware of the opportunities.
You bet. The Chicago public school system is where we get a lot of our kids that ended up, and it's for both men and women who are participating, and they typically start at a really young age. So whether we get them in junior high or we get them in high school, and then we get their brothers and their sisters that are a part of it, it's typically the kids that are missed by other opportunities that we're able to then take them into the fold. One of the things I love about it, again, wrestling is a way that we help teach them the lessons they're going to need for life, but we're able to support them in other areas too, where we do a lot of work with them on tutoring. We do a lot of work with them on travel and getting them to and from places where they oftentimes don't have that opportunity. So it's a well-rounded opportunity for kids here in Chicago to really grow and expand.
It's nice to see and get the high praise of things going well here in Chicago. Oftentimes challenges are highlighted or things that maybe aren't going well, right? And so to have something that's happening here in Chicago that's worthy of some recognition and praise, I think is great. You mentioned the girl side of things, and that has really changed quite a bit. I know where my kids go, which is Montini, they have expanded their program. I mean, there are some girl wrestlers there, and I know that I was out with the World Championships that were in Iowa City a couple years ago, and the girl teams from around the world have really.
Yeah.
So that has been an opportunity that was really met with a lot of resistance early on, and now it is just, I think, blossomed to the point where not only is it taken seriously, but there's some great things happening.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I was part of seeing that unfold back when Trish Saunders was the very first world champion for the United States. I was part of watching the women actually being accepted as a official sport in the Olympic Games to be able to see that unfold. And when Trish and some of our earlier pioneers were starting, they had to wrestle on teams with boys, and they beat the crap out of a lot of the boys, by the way, too. But now, you know, they have women's teams that are able to compete. There's collegiate women's teams, and they've done a phenomenal job. At the end of the day, wrestling is a human sport. It's a physical activity that you have two arms, two legs, and if you don't have two arms, one arm, one leg, it doesn't matter. You can still be able to participate in the sport.
It's neat to see it happening, and in even some of those sort of marquee signature programs like, you know, Iowa having their team, and just, you know, once you have some of those cornerstone programs be able to be examples, it makes everybody else look at it and say, hey, maybe this is something that we should be doing. So it's exciting to see, and a lot of people are taking advantage of it, and it's great for you to have such great seats for it too, to be able to see it all happen and be a part of some of that change.
You bet.
We're going to take a break, and we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Brett Penninger. We're going to talk about the book Larger Than Life, where outside of instructing, you know, and coaching kids and Beat the Streets, he's put together a book where you can do that probably from anywhere, right? You can just from the comfort of your own home, maybe even in a car if you're in the passenger seat. We'll continue our conversation with Brett when we come back. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane in for Dean here on a Sunday, on a championship gold medal hockey excellence, global domination Sunday, and excited to have, as we all sort of aspire to follow in footsteps of the hockey team and be our best. And the guy here in studio helping people do that is author, inspirational coach, wrestler, guy that was involved in the Olympics. We're going to tap his brain a little bit for that. He's the author of Larger Than Life in Pursuit of Discovering Your Full Potential, Brett Penninger. Brett, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Not everybody, even inspirational people who have something to say and can impart, you know, teachable moments and kind of help people be better. Not everybody has a book in them. And so what was it? Was it something, the kind of thing where you were, that everyone was coming to you and said, Brad, you got to write a book? Or was it where you were like, hey, I've always wanted to write a book, or this would be a great way to extend what is that I can do into another format?
You know, I wanted to write a book because I wanted to serve humanity. I've had a lot of people that have poured into me, and, you know, starting with the foundation of wrestling that it had built, in the resilience and the toughness and the goal setting and the work ethic. I've had a lot of support along the way from coaches and teachers. And then along that way, I wanted to spend some time to take that baton and give it back. And so I wrote the book to support people in discovering their full potential. I've had the opportunity and been blessed to succeed at extraordinary levels in a lot of different arenas of life. And I'm still a work in progress. And the whole point for me is I want to give that back to humanity so that we can continue, grow, and develop. Because were it not for the coaches and the teachers that I've had, I wouldn't be able to do the things that I've done or have the experiences that I have. And I want to be that conduit for others.
Not everybody can, you know, have an athletic career. For those people that want to be their best and kind of reach their full potential, what are some sort of universal things that people can do? You know, whether it's just maybe it's a different mindset, maybe it's positivity, maybe it's some, you know, building in some good habits. Like, what are things that people can do, even if they're not, you know, an athlete or a wrestler?
You bet. Well, the principles that I have outlined in the book are universal. You know, they're not applicable only if you're an athlete or if you're in a specific discipline, in art or in science. And one of the things that I have in there is something that is not new, but it's the law of attraction. At the very end of the day, beginning with the end in mind. Dr. Stephen Covey in The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People talks about that the very beginning. So visualizing yourself already there. So no matter what it is that you want to accomplish or do, I don't care if it's a relationship that you want to be in, it's a job you want to get, it's a career that you want to have, see that first within your mind's eye, and then you're going to see it secondly in the world's eyes. And that's something that I learned in wrestling. You know, you got to do a lot of work to, first of all, have a target on what you want to accomplish and then have somebody support you in being able to go through it to do it.
Yeah, I think they always say, I don't know, what is that saying? In order to be really successful at something, you have to find and do something that you're passionate about or that you love, right? Then you're not only going to be more successful, but it's not going to feel like work. And, you know, one of your chapters, it's like what lights you up, right? So sometimes, you know, not everybody is in tune with exactly what it is that they're excited about, whether it's, you know, whether it's food or whether it is sports or whether it's, you know, being a park ranger, you know, whatever it is, right? You have to sort of, are there any kind of tools to sort of determine that? Because maybe there's a number of things, right, that are kind of competing for that big target.
You know, getting clear on what lights you up is actually principle number one in the book. And the thing that it really takes to do that is to just be still. You know, be still and notice the things that you're naturally good at. Notice the things that you're attracted to. Notice the things that you do really well that other people might struggle with. And that's when you're going to find something that it doesn't feel like work because you're drawn to it versus feeling like you have to be motivated to do it. And so most people find that at a younger age, and then they give it up because they don't think it's possible. And some, as you get older, it's just getting really clear on what's important to you and chasing that with all your might.
Always here, if you can see it, you can be it. I'm a big believer in that. I don't care what it is, whether it's business success, whether it's relationships, whether it's there are some things that seem hard, and people build up a lot of obstacles inside. But if they can see someone that maybe is not so different from them, or at least in front of them, succeeding or doing things, then you at least know it's possible. It's not like you're landing on, you know, the moon kind of thing. And so talk a little bit about that, is sort of being that example or providing examples so people can see things happening and you're like, you know what, you can do this. You've got examples and seeing it happen.
You bet. Well, there's a lot of ways to access that type of knowledge and that experience. You know, I was blessed to be able to access it by having coaches who had accomplished what it was that I wanted to do. You can have it from, if you want to be in clergy, finding somebody who's already really done it successfully. So finding somebody as an example, you can do it through listening through their podcast. You can do it by being mentored or coached by them. You can do it by reading a book that they wrote. You can do it by watching or reading a book of an autobiography of them to start learning the trajectory of what it took for them. And then you can start seeing what you would have to do to model it so that you could then start reaching into that same level of success.
We got some great texters texting in. Of course, Alan Wu just he won his third consecutive state championship for Montini, and then from we reached quite a big listening audience. Indiana state champion Alex Bastiak. She was a four-time Indiana state champion girls wrestler. Wow. So people, because this is all happening right now. This is happening this weekend and next weekend as well. So it's exciting to see some of those things, you know, that are going on. When we think of, you know, the power and just sort of the scope of UFC, and not everybody is there for the mixed martial arts and all that. It's a little bit violent for everybody. And I've always been, and when I talked with, you know, a number of friends and colleagues, is that wrestling is something that's a lot more approachable and universal. It's already happened in almost every community around the country. And I think you have this untapped fan base for those kind of things. So excited to see some contemporaries, some people that I know is so ambitious and so risky going after this RAF, like the Real American Freestyle. So Hulk Hogan is a guy that I knew. He passed away, unfortunately, but he was a proponent in it. And of course, he's more on the Showtime style of wrestling as opposed to the traditional. But your just thoughts on that, to see them take what is sort of that UFC format, you know, have these big cards with, you know, recognizable names in amateur wrestling, and then create these pretty well attended things on national TV. It's a big step.
It's a huge step. You know, one of the downsides of wrestling as a sport, an amateur sport, is we didn't have a professional outlet. You know, so you play college football, you can go to the NFL. You play college basketball, you can go to the NBA. Wrestling didn't have that. And we have toyed with it on different occasions on trying to figure it out. But RAF is doing it at a level that we could only dream of before. And it's exciting. Like, I've been able to watch several of the matches, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. Exactly what we need in the sport.
Well, because before you'd get out of college wrestling, even at the highest level, you could go be a coach, right, or a gym teacher,
yep.
Right? You didn't necessarily have a lucrative situation to go. And a lot of times with the Olympics, you have that situation where you know that is the pinnacle of what it is that you can do in the sport. I wanted to get your thoughts just on the Olympics in general. You know, very few. We all watch it. We're all inspired by it. Obviously, U.S. hockey team, the girls and the men winning the gold medal, and so that's going to get a lot of attention appropriately. But being involved with the Olympics, what's it like, you know, as opposed to just watching it, to be involved and part of the entire thing?
The beauty of the Olympics is it's a global family. You know, you're here in the United States, you go to college, and I went to Wisconsin, so you go Big Ten, so you're really all about the Big Ten or all about the NCAA. When you start talking about the Olympics, it's the world. And it's one of the most beautiful experiences I've ever had when you see athletes, human beings from all over the planet coming together with a similarity and understanding of what it took to be there, a respect for the competition and the honor to be able to compete. It kind of levels out any political differences, any religious differences, any cultural differences. It makes everyone there whole as one to compete to be the best.
Well, at a time when we need more togetherness, we need more things we can all agree on and be excited about, the Olympics is certainly one of those, Brett. And as we let you go, where can people get the book and then maybe follow you on social media? Where can people connect?
You bet. Well, they can get the book on Amazon. Very, very simple and plain. Just go to Amazon. I have it in both an ebook and a paperback and in an audiobook. Very simple to find it there. Larger Than Life, In Pursuit of Discovering Your Full Potential. You can also reach me on my website at belargerthan.com. And from there, I'm able to tell you a little bit more about the book and to set you up to be able to support you in coaching and helping mentor you.
We'll have links up at WGNradio.com for that. Brett, thanks so much for what you're doing, for writing the book, making the world a better place. Thanks for jumping on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. When we come back from the news, we're going to have Lou Weisbach. He is one of the driving forces for the Bears in Indiana and the stadium deal. He'll be able to kind of share all the great things in store, right? The pros, the cons, all that. So keep it here. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane in for Dean. And sources say that no matter where the Bears play, the theme song, the fight song, will remain the same. It will not be adjusted to a different fight song. I think that is good. And of course, if the team can stay the course on being the resurgent Bears that we have learned to know, love, and hopefully watch as they progress towards a hopeful Super Bowl, that would be great. So much indecision happening related to the stadium. This is an exciting time for people to get it right. And people, whenever they came up with a new stadium, I don't know if it was 20, 25 years ago, maybe it was even longer ago. It seems like it was an opportunity when it came out. There were a lot of things and challenges that people didn't see as answering what was needed for the Bears at that point. You want something that the fans can enjoy, that the fans can love, that maybe could be a venue for a Final Four or for a Super Bowl or could host some of those things that the Bears as the NFL's cornerstone franchise, you know, a proper Hall of Fame and an entertainment district and all of those things. And so now competing for that, we have the Arlington Heights situation. And then now we have our neighbor to the south, who we know and love, Indiana. A guy that has his hand on the pulse of so much of it is Lou Weisbach. Lou, welcome to WGN.
Thank you, Dane. It's a pleasure being with you.
No. So here's the thing, is people typically fear things they don't understand. And that has been one of the things. People are just like, do they like the idea of the Bears leaving? And so that is the thought. But this isn't, you know, where the White Sox many years ago were going to go to maybe Florida or Vegas or something else or Nashville. This isn't that. They're still going to be the Bears. They're going to be right here staying in the Chicagoland area, no matter where they are, right? Whether it's Arlington Heights or whether it's Indiana. So all that same, just the excitement around the fan base will still be able to watch the team. Just your thoughts as a guy that's in and around all of this as it gets proposed. Is that part of sort of your job, is saying, like, hey guys, just calm down, there's some real positives here?
Well, I guess I look at this as a Chicago Bear, a lifelong Chicago Bear fan, and friends with a lot of the great players in Bear history, and I'm able to step back from it and not be emotional, because I think that the New York Giants don't play in New York. And I think that the Kansas City Chiefs are moving across the border to another state. And everybody's fine, and it's great. At the end of the day, Bear fans don't have to be concerned at all, because they're going to have a wonderful new stadium, one of the greatest stadiums in America. They're not going to have to worry if it's 10 degrees below zero. If they move to Portage, they're the same distance from downtown as they would have to go to Arlington Heights. So it's no big deal. It's really just some people overreacting to the state. They're going to be the Chicago Bears, period. Portage and Hammond are both in Chicagoland. So they're staying. And, you know, it's like, would you get upset if your team was playing in Skokie and you had to travel, which is how far it is from the border of Illinois to Portage. You have to go to Wilmette for a game. I mean, it's just not a big deal. The fan experience regardless of where it goes. And I have great faith in the Bears organization. Kevin Warren's a friend of mine. They're going to do a great job. We're going to have a great stadium. So I think everybody should take a breath and understand the Bears are going to make the decision that they think is best for their team, for themselves financially, but most importantly for the fan experience.
Yeah.
They love the fans, and we've got a special group of fans in Chicago. So I think if everybody takes a step back, we're going to be fine no matter where this goes.
You're already helping people to feel at least a little better about it because there's just maybe some paranoia, right? Not understanding what it's going to be, how it could be, what's involved. Before we got on the air today, Eli was talking about, well, maybe they may call them the Indiana Bears, right? Or maybe it was one of those things where it was the situation where, you know, that was in play. And of course, it's not. And when you can talk a little bit about the fan experience, that's one thing. One of the things that people have had concerns about, and it's addressed, you know, in some of the information that you have out about the proposal, it seems very Bear friendly. And we'll get into the financial side. And that is one of the things that the Bears fans complain about. Maybe the Bears don't spend the money that they could. They obviously have a different, you know, financial makeup and business structure than a lot of these other teams. And so to be able to have it be something that's beneficial on the finance side for the Bears to be able to not only compete on the experience side, but maybe on the open market in other ways for amenities and players and things. So that's one thing. But also, and I see it addressed here, is accessibility. So talk about that. You know, it's not very far. You still have the lakefront because it's going to be called Halas Harbor, correct? People may be getting there by rail, by boat. There's a lot of ways to get to the new place.
Right. So what I would, if you don't mind, spin it a little different way. What I would say is that, and if you look at the reactions in Indiana and Illinois, we have an affordability crisis. A lot of people are having a hard time paying for their food and going grocery shopping. Whether you're in Illinois or Indiana, people don't want to be taxed to build a new stadium for the Chicago Bears or anybody. And it's not just in Illinois or Indiana. It's a national movement against this. And I want to applaud JB for standing up and not just opening up the floodgates on people, on the citizens of Illinois to pay to build a new stadium. And especially when there's an option. And in this case, the Bears are aware and the city of Portage is aware that there's an option that doesn't require any taxpayer dollars. And so to me, that's the right answer. But once again, it's a business decision on the Bears side. And I have every confidence that Kevin and his team and the McCaskey family, who have shepherded us, as you mentioned before, last year to one of the most exciting seasons in Bear history, will make the right decision. At the end of the day, they want to have a stadium that's Super Bowl ready, that's state-of-the-art, and that will be much more fun for a fan to go to, especially in the wintertime, and enjoy Bear football. And they're going to get that whether the stadium is in Arlington Heights or in Portage or any place. That's going to happen. So I think Bear fans, if anything, should just kind of sit back and enjoy the ride.
We know that when you can go ahead and have a team that is succeeding, it is the time, it is the opportunity to strike when the iron's hot to go ahead and make a case for this, where people value the team and the experience and see the potentials that are happening there. And on the finance side, we know that it is going to be something that won't impact the taxpayers in a negative way, certainly not here in Illinois if Portage ends up being the destination. So if you could share a little bit about what it will mean to the team, right, that they're going to be able to benefit from it, and then how that may, I don't know, maybe trickle down to opportunities or maybe some benefits for the fans.
Yeah. So the plan in Portage is one that's fully funded through a process that our company, and it's called In Tickets We Trust, has to be able to provide the upfront capital to build a new stadium. And so we're excited about it. The city of Portage is excited about it. The Bears know about it, to be sure. I've been meeting with Kevin for a long time. But the key element to it is that the plan doesn't require any upfront tax money or any new taxes of any way, shape, or form. So that's exciting. But the fan experience is going to be remarkable. Not only will we have a 70,000 to 80,000 seat stadium, state of the art everything, including sound, including graphics and visuals. There's going to be a 40-story condo building attached to it, where fans and the Bear players and opposing players can stay the night before the game and just go underneath into the stadium. You're going to have 275 acres for the Bears underlined, and it will be free to the Bears to develop, to make it really a destination site, much like the Cubs have successfully done around Wrigley Field, but in a different way. So it's exciting. It really is. So one of the things that came out was, yes, you can still have tailgating, but we're also going to be able to have sailgating because of people's ability to go on the water to the games. And so there's, I will tell you right now, there have been 30 million people who have looked at the plan and the video for Portage, Indiana. And there's tremendous excitement. And those people are not just coming from Indiana. They're coming from Illinois and all across the country. So there's a lot of excitement about the Bears on the field. There's a lot of excitement about the new home of the Bears. And Portage is offering a Super Bowl-ready stadium in a place that really essentially is almost equidistant from downtown Chicago to Arlington Heights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you think about this, and here's another thing too. If we're realistic about, you know, and we, you know, whether it's, you know, the political side of things and some of that dysfunction, there's a romantic attachment to it about Chicago, but Indiana, to see them pull together and you know, just kind of all agree and be able to support this in a way, and then on the construction side, you know that they could go ahead and get it done quick. We're going to talk and continue our conversation with Lou right after this break, and we're going to find out a little bit more about that and continue to kind of explore the ideas of Portage and the Bears when we come back. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane in for Dean. And as we talk about some of the sports, people are excited about the Bears' upcoming seasons, maybe Super Bowl runs happening. Will they be happening, you know, all in the Chicagoland area? Yes, right. But will they be over the border in Indiana? Maybe. And on the line is a guy with his hand on the pulse of so much of it, Lou Weisbach. Lou, welcome back.
Thank you.
So
happy to be with you.
One of the things that, regardless of how it all shakes out, that's refreshing to see is just, you know, a state working, you know, together, right, on both sides of the aisle, pulling together for something that they agree is a positive. We know that, at least from an Illinois standpoint, if an Indiana situation happens, it's not going to cost, you know, taxpayers in Illinois anything. And you wonder, the way that it's described, and of course the mayor of Portage brought you in to help advise on this, because people are wondering, like, well, hey, if they're going to give the Bears most of the revenue and if they're going to build it, what's in it for them? Explain the positives on the Indiana side.
So first of all, the positives on the Indiana side and the Portage side in particular is it makes Portage a destination site for not only Southern Illinois, but Northern Indiana. And it gives them a unique place. At the end of the day, the football stadium would become the best concert venue in the Midwest, the most up-to-date, the most exciting place, which will draw people from Illinois as well as Indiana. So financially, because of the other events that are going to occur in this building and because of the condo tower next to the building, there's tremendous upside for Portage from a profitability perspective and for the state of Indiana by holding these concerts. And that would be the revenue from that would go to the either the state of Indiana, depending on how it's finally structured, or to the city of Portage. So the beauty of this plan is that it works from every perspective. It makes Portage and by the way, I should mention to you that there, since this was announced, 30 million people have seen Portage's presentation.
Wow.
30 million people, which I would say, if you think about it, Portage has been on the map for a long time, but not at this level. And so you start to think of the upside for the community of Portage, it being a destination. But again, for the city of Chicago, not, and the state of Illinois, not having to pay their hitting taxpayers for taxpayer dollars. It's something that really works for everybody. And so Portage is excited about it. I will tell you that I've dealt in national politics. I've known presidents and mayors around the country and senators and congressmen. The political people in Portage have been beyond a pleasure to work with. They've been smart. They've been reasonable, thoughtful. And so to me, this is a really an ideal answer for everybody. The Bears, the people who live in Indiana, the people who live in Illinois, and ultimately no taxpayer dollars.
That's music to a lot of people's ears. Last thing, when people have great ideas, there's just a general amount of dysfunction that happens with getting things done and infighting and backbiting and all that. One of the slides on the presentation says shovel ready. If everybody gets to a point where they agree, how long would it take, you know, with the entire state of Indiana mobilized to go ahead and build this thing? What is that time frame?
Yeah, so the city of Portage's analysis was, and you saw it in their presentation, that they'd be ready to break ground in June. Frankly, I'm not an expert at that issue, but, I mean, they're already working on all of the issues that have to be done, including soil testing and all the technical issues. So I believe that they'll be able to accomplish their goal, again, to the extent that the Bears make a decision in a reasonable time period. But let's put it this way. If it were July or August, nobody would have thought 3 weeks ago that a new Bear stadium could break ground that quickly.
Yep.
So whatever the case is, and obviously there's some unknown factors that enter into it, architecturally and in terms of technology and in terms of the soil and so on, it'll be ready to go soon, and the stadium will be a Super Bowl ready stadium and a state of the art stadium.
Well, it's great to see too, and gotta understand, and I think to make this clear too, this isn't a situation where Indiana is stealing the Bears, whether they're great Chicagoans, huge Bear fans like Lou Eisbach, whether there's other prominent Chicago people, and of course the structure within the Bears as well. There's a lot of people on the inside that are pulling for this as a genuine option to be considered. And so we'll see how it all works. But Lou, I can't thank you enough for coming on and giving a little clarity, a little insight into this option, this kind of attractive option that the Bears are considering.
Well, it's my pleasure and happy to be with you anytime. And two things, please say hi to Bob Surratt, my friend.
I will.
And I noticed on your commercial before I went on, there was a commercial done by John Vincent, who is a wonderful friend of mine and a great soul and a great talent as well.
All right. We will definitely pass that along. Have a great rest of your weekend, Lou. And thanks so much for jumping on.
My pleasure.
All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to fully celebrate National Margarita Day. We're going to have some great restaurant tours on where you can enjoy and celebrate with probably El Bandito Yankee, but also some great places, whether it's Fat Rosie's, whether it's Ancho and Agave. And, of course, if you're making your way to Arizona, Barrio Queen. So keep it here. It's Dane in for Dean, 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane in for Dean on not only a gold medal Sunday for our hockey team and in the Olympics, but also it is National Margarita Day. And when you think globally, the place to talk to when it comes to great margaritas, especially for a destination location that so many Chicagoans call their second home, especially Cubs and Sox and spring training, Barrio Queen is the place to go. Not only do they have amazing food for fun and families, but they have really the best margaritas on this planet or any other. We've got Andrew Patty on. Andrew, welcome to WGN.
Hey, Dane. Great talking to you.
Oh, it's good to talk to you. I know that you're super busy, probably filling up pitcher after pitcher of delicious and highly desired margaritas, but I appreciate you taking a minute away to kind of brag about Barrio Queen.
Yeah, fantastic, and especially on the best day of the year. It's National Margarita Day. And in Arizona right now, it's 80 degrees, so you cannot beat it. So it's the perfect day for a refreshing margarita.
That's not fair, number one, to rub that in. But we want to have it, like aspirational place. Where should we go? Where would we want to go? Well, we definitely, the Arizona area, the Phoenix area, Scottsdale, all of those areas around there are great places to be, especially as hope springs eternal on the baseball side. Before we get into the margaritas, and we know you guys do them, the frozen margaritas are just taking the area by storm, and maybe now at 80 degrees, it would be nice to have, but I think it's essential. It's a public service when you get up to that 110 degrees that you guys have in the summer. But food-wise, talk about Barrio Queen.
Yeah, so Barrio Queen, if you guys have never been, it is the destination when you come to Arizona in Phoenix. We've been around for over 15 years, and we are award-winning, nationally recognized, just through our recipes, our famous guacamole that put us on the map. We've been on the Food Network several times regarding our guacamole. So the food is scratch-made, recipes passed down by generations. So if you're looking for the best quality Mexican food, there's only one spot to go. And to pair that Mexican food, you know you got to have the margaritas to accompany that great food. And we do it better than anybody else because we don't cut corners. So everything is scratch made. It's fresh lime juice, fresh ingredients. We're not doing that purees, those mixes. We're doing the real deal because we got to show that great quality tequila love with these margaritas. So you're going to taste the difference. You're going to feel the difference. And the atmosphere is so cool. Like the places are gorgeous. It's all decor from Mexico. Like we have artists that come down from Mexico to paint the murals. So every detail, everywhere you look, you're immersed in just transported to a different place when you're there. And the weather is perfect. So if you want to sit on the patio and you want to hang out in the sunshine during spring training, there's no better place than Barrio.
Yeah, because of the culture and where you guys are situated, in order to be as successful as you guys are, you have to be doing the food the right way out there. And so what is your favorite dish on the menu? I know it gets switched up on a regular basis, and the chefs are always working to kind of keep things fresh and fun. But what are some of the things that is your favorite?
Yeah, so we have tacos on the menu. We have, I believe, over 15 different tacos with different style proteins. And one of my favorites is our birrias. So it's braised short rib that we cook down for hours at a time, and it's just so delicious and succulent and just melt in your mouth. That's one of my favorites. So when you come in, just get the short rib birrias tacos. Absolutely lights out. And then also a signature dish is our cochinita pibil. We cook this pork for over 18 hours.
Wow.
The traditional way, in banana leaf. So that's what I'm talking about. Like our recipes, we do it the right way. And if you want that great authentic taste, there's nothing better than Barrio Queen.
So if you're down there for spring training, whether regardless, you can agree that you like good food, whether you like the Cubs, whether you're there for the Sox, and even if you're there to catch the NASCAR racer or the IndyCar race at Phoenix Raceway at the same time, that is great. And before we let you go, it is National Margarita Day, and of course you do have a great selection of great tequilas there, but our favorite one up here in Chicago, and certainly one of your favorites, is El Bandido Yankee.
Yeah, it's my favorite. El Bandido, it, no additives. Like if you want a clean, traditional tequila, it is the best. And we're making all of our frozen margaritas with El Bandido. And then we have flavored margaritas. So we crafted and we spent years to figure out how to make the perfect frozen margarita, and we partner with El Bandido and we figured it out. So come down today to any 8 Barrio Queen locations. We're doing half off all of our margaritas. That includes those frozens with El Bandido in it. And then also our locations are right next to all the stadiums. So if you're going to Sloan Park to see the Cubs play, or you're in Scottsdale and you're at a different location, all of our Barrio Queens are so conveniently located, like less than a mile away. So it's the perfect pregame spot. It's the perfect postgame spot. We have happy hour with those El Bandido frozen margaritas. So there's no reason not to visit us when you're in Arizona.
Yeah, I said, Andrew, it's a public service, right? And so we're trying to help people lead better lives, right? And so now you got that part figured out. You know where to go in order to not only get that hydration, that great refreshment on the margarita side and the frozen margarita side, and great food too. And so we'll have links up at WGNradio.com for all of it. As we let you go, the website for Barrio Queen?
BarrioQueen.com. Visit us on online. Visit on a social. Just check in. For people in Chicago, Arizona is their second home. So come visit us, have a good time, and there's no better way to do it.
All right. Thanks, Andrew. Patty, thanks so much for jumping on the show. And then now we've got Victor. So when it comes to the local situation here, and so I say local, but, you know, we reach 38 states and Canada, so a bunch of them. But my favorite place in the Chicagoland area, and a place, of course, that you can get on National Margarita Day, you can get an El Bandito Yankee margarita. You can toast to Chris Chelios, right? He's one of the founders of the company and super excited with an Olympic win. We got Victor Tenorio. Victor, welcome to WGN.
Hey, how you guys doing? Happy National Margarita Day, guys. This is a big day for us. Thank you for having me. So excited to be here with you, and thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, Victor, you know that you're out there, and I appreciate you taking us a minute away, but you were out leading the parade, the National Margarita Day parade. You were out in front with your sort of band leader. You had a big scepter and, of course, a pitcher of margaritas.
Yeah, we are doing amazing, amazing margaritas every day. We celebrate National Margarita Day every day, not only on National Margarita Day. For us, National Margarita is every day. We do the best margaritas in the Chicagoland. We got the skinny margarita with El Bandido Yankee, added to free tequila. We love El Bandido Yankee, either me or in any margarita. It's no reason for don't come and celebrate with us.
Well, Victor, we wanted to
7 locations.
Yeah, mention some of the food things that if you got any things that are happening, or and then of course the locations for people. I know there's a bunch of different locations. We got that new one out in Oakbrook. People are excited.
Yeah, Oakbrook used to have a reopening party this past weekend, and linked with the National Margarita Day today. So we did have a big party with DJs, raffles. We are really, really excited to show the community what is Farrosi's, our new restaurant in Chicago. Right now, actually, we opened a new...
We lost him. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have more on National Margarita Day. I know we're going to talk with Tim Shear from Blues Hog about some of the things that are happening in Houston, right, for the big barbecue. And we're going to have Jim Bob Morris. He is the owner of El Bandito Yankee, and he's going to come on and help us toast National Margarita Day. So keep it here. Dane and Ferdine, 720 WGN. Great to have Victor back with us. As we let you go, Victor, you know, give maybe the website, social media, places where people can get more information, get out and see you, not only today, but all week.
At farrosi.com, you can come and visit to any of our locations in Illinois. And again, excited to open the new location in Orlando. And, you know, obviously El Bandido is going to be part of the party. We're going to blow it out of the water in Orlando. So grand opening the first week of March. So I'm very excited for that. And you can come and join the party. I mean, Dan, this is your house. You know that. And thank you for having me. And come and celebrate. Every day is National Margarita Day at Farrosi's, guys. We got a new happy hour coming next, next week.
Victor's got a terrible phone. So, well, we know what he wanted to say. It's get out to Fat Rosie's and enjoy that. The food is absolutely excellent. Of course, the cocktail program is great as well. And then I know we're going to be able to talk with Tim Shear from Blues Hog. Hopefully we'll be able to get him. No, maybe not. Maybe we're just going to talk about the awesome Olympics, and hopefully Jim Bob will be able to give a call before the end of the show as well. But so, Eli, let's talk a little bit about the Olympics, or maybe, you know, if what kind of feedback have you been getting? I know some people were less excited about the maybe not getting to experience it in sort of time warp fashion, right, and to be able to watch it. But, man, I think this is the kind of thing that not only celebrating today, some Olympics, you know, if you watch the luge and someone wins, maybe you're less excited the next day. I think this one's going to stick.
Yeah, this is one that you're going to remember just as well tomorrow as you did the rest of the day today. And if you haven't seen it yet, you will. I'm sure you'll have time to see it. The replays will be out. If you were watching it live, you understand the emotion of the moment. Everyone was ready to get up early this morning. I know that bars across the country were opening up early, and governments were changing their rules to allow alcohol sales at 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning. So the entire nation was ready for this game, and that team made us proud.
Yeah, it's going to be very – I mean, it's one of those things that you wonder what is going to happen with them. Now, these are all NHL players, so it isn't like the Miracle on Ice back in the day. You've got an opportunity for everybody to kind of bask in it. And you wonder on the geopolitical side of it, whether it's the kind of thing where, you had back in 1980, you had the Cold War going on. You had, you know, whether it was the Russians and all of that going on. And I think you have a little bit of that as well today with you know, with the Canadians, you know, where you've got sort of that. I mean, I don't know if we actually have a rivalry with the Canadians. We do definitely on the hockey side and the sports side, but then also too political. You've got one of those where you've got, you know, the opportunity for people to think to themselves like, hey, is Canada, you know, we're fighting with them on tariffs and some of those other things. There's a little bit of animosity. I know that the Canadians have taken a lot of the products off of theirs. Well, yeah, sure. Yeah, let's go ahead and we're going to crosstalk with Steve. We've got that opportunity. I know that he enjoys a little bit of tequila now and then. You can get to whatever microphone makes sense for you. What you on there? You're in number 5, 6. Oh, are you okay?
Okay. Yes, thank you very much. You know, it is an important day to celebrate, and it's almost. You got me?
You gotcha. There you go.
There you go. You got me now?
You're here. I can hear you.
Okay. It is almost like I had a margarita this morning. I wish I had. That would have been wonderful. I love National Margarita Day.
Why?
Why?
Well, I mean, because I think of you as a noted pet expert. I think of you as a noted pet expert, but I would love to hear how people that maybe are not necessarily, you know, restaurant people or maybe famous imbibers, right, how they can appreciate National Margarita Day.
I love a good margarita. Are you kidding me? That is the most important. In fact, that should be a national holiday. We should all have a day off work for that.
Oh, I don't know about a day off of work.
Yes!
Because let's say if Fat Rosie's, let's say if Ancho and Agave, let's say if Barrio Queen, if they all took the day off to celebrate at home, who's going to provide the margaritas for the people?
That's a good point. Yes. And there is nothing more important than a good margarita, except watching a good hockey game. And boy, you were on the radio, but it was an amazing hockey game. Oh. And I will be talking. I'm talking about the U.S. victory over Canada. And I'll be talking to Doc Emmerich at the top of the show.
Nice. No, explain the reasons why people, even if there's been a spoiler alert situation, that they should still watch it. Because I know what happened, game. But I still got to watch.
Yeah, it was such a good game if you're a hockey fan. Also, it was like a National Hockey League All-Star game because the Canadians, each and every member of the team, well, they're all National Hockey League players. And if you're a hockey fan, and the same for the U.S. team. So if you're a hockey fan, it was great. Except the All-Star game, I don't know if they're giving exactly 500% necessarily. Here they are.
This is all the entire
they
pride.
Were all in, I'll
I
tell
think,
you.
Right. It's like a little bit of immortality on the line for this. You look at some of these, especially for the American side. The Canadians win a lot of them, but it was great to see America win. Wow. I cannot wait to get out there and celebrate with a margarita. And I'll encourage people to tune into the show coming up at the top of the hour.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks, Steve. We finally got Tim Scheer on the radio. Of course, he is a, you know, barbecue legend. He is a world champion pitmaster. He is also someone that is familiar with, you know, the success and smoothness of an El Bandito Yankee as part of our Banditos and Barbecue team. And of course, on a Food Time segment, it's great to talk some barbecue. Tim Scheer, welcome to WGN.
Hey, Dane. How are you, bud?
I am okay. I'm excited. So what are you doing? I know that you're busy celebrating National Margarita Day. It's a day like no other. But how does a Tim Scheer do that? I know you often pair, whether it's the spirits or the cocktails, with some of the barbecue excellence. What are you doing?
I'm getting my work done out at the farm first. We're having a bunch of calves out here right now, and it's cold. So I'm getting those guys taken care of. And then, like you said, I'm going to go relax a little bit, maybe watch a little NASCAR, drink a little margarita, a little Bandito, something like that. Might even cook some barbecue later on.
Wow. That is something that you do as you. So oftentimes they say, you know, because the Olympics happen once every 4 years, that athletes have to really fine tune their training to dial it in to be at the top of their game for the Olympics. That is very similar to the Houston Rodeo and Barbecue, where you are fine-tuning your game to be ready for next week, where yet another world championship is on the line.
It is on the line, and Houston's one of the biggest ones in the country, so it's right up there with Memphis in May and the American Royal. So, we've been fine-tuning and dialing in. I've been practicing cooking half chickens because that's what we've got to put in the box. I've been practicing brisket. Obviously, brisket is king in Texas. So, you know, I can't be fumbling when I get down there. I got to be on my A game.
when it comes to the judging, and this one is a little bit different, like you said, as far as the meets, it's not the same as, let's say, maybe the Jack or maybe the American Royal. There is a little bit of a twist on it. Like, how hard was that as a world champion to be able to sort of like understand sort of the unique judging that happens? Because to win in some of these different contests, it's pretty tough.
It is tough, and I love it. I love the challenge. I love the, you know, what's different about it. It's not the same old, same old. So, you know, I think an elite pitmaster has to accept those challenges and you know, make your adjustments and do your preparation and just get ready for it, you know. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's barbecue. We're out there having fun and enjoying our buddies. That's kind of, you know, the second most important thing when I'm down there is getting to see everybody, and all my friends from Texas and all over the place will be there. So, you know, really looking forward to that as well.
We'd be remiss if we didn't mention some of the industry success. And this is a guy, Tim Shearer, Blues Hog Barbecue, Shake and Bake Barbecue, a guy who's won multiple KCBS titles, world championships, and all of that. But also is the man behind some of your most beloved and most successful brands in the barbecue world, as far as Blues Hog with the sauces and the rubs and the charcoal, the Gateway Drum Smoker. I know that you've switched around as more of a promotional end with that, Marble Ridge. What was your thought process to try to control all aspects of the barbecue world, not only on the competition side, but everything else that goes into it?
It really wasn't a major thought process. It's just kind of how my barbecue, you know, world and life has evolved, really. I mean, you know, this started as a hobby on the weekends with my family, you know, just traveling and hitting up small towns and, you know, just getting away for the weekend and competing. But, you know, obviously we got competitive and, you know, I just started trying to research and figure out new ways to win and try to be ahead of the game a little bit. And that's when the Gateway Drum Smoker came about. You know, cooking hot and fast over direct coals. I mean, that's nothing new to barbecue, but it's, you know, it was kind of new to competition and doing everything that fast. So, you know, it kind of just worked out. One thing led to another, and along came the Blues Hog project. And, you know, it's been a lot of fun. You know, obviously it's work and there's always challenges and it gets frustrating sometimes, but man, it's been a lot of fun. And we've had, you know, it's just been an opportunity of a lifetime, really, to be able to cook barbecue and come up with recipes and meet people all over the world, you know, over some meat. So it's crazy.
Man, I don't know how you have time for it all.
And, you know, obviously, you know, with us, we want to establish that everything we do is out to be the best, and competition is the way to prove that.
Yeah, I don't know how you have time for it all. So you're like a bovine midwife right now, right, delivering calves, and then you've got all of that success. At what point would you ever decide to just give up the competition side, or maybe you just pick some of these, you know, world, it's like a golfer, right? It just does the Masters, right? That's what it is. You're not sort of grinding it out anymore, but where you just kind of sit back and become that barbecue impresario you already are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of at the point where we do, like you said, pick the biggest competitions to go to, and that's just primarily because I don't have time to hit all of them. I love doing it still, and I've kind of made it a goal this year to pick up a few, you know, smaller ones, because those are really enjoyable too. A little more laid back atmosphere at some of those. So, yeah, man, I'm not really in it for the accolades or to be anything else like that. I just, you know, I enjoy it. I want to keep doing it. I want to make good products for people that also enjoy it and just spread the, you know, spread the Blues Hog love around. So that's pretty much where I'm at, man. And, you know, if it's something that I don't enjoy doing, I usually just don't do it.
Not in it for the accolades, a reluctant barbecue superstar, Tim Shearer. And we're going to have links up at WGNradio.com. Can't wait to see you next week as you guys get to, hopefully, that's a pretty cool trophy, too, that they've got, hoist another a championship trophy. And, of course, we'll do some El Bandito and barbecue. We'll do some cocktails for it. And as we let you go, give the social media-wise, you know, where people can keep up with everything you're doing and follow Blues Hog.
Yeah, for sure. Now, we're looking forward to having you guys down there, but you can find us and follow along the whole weekend. We'll be documenting on at Blues Hog Nation on Instagram, Blues Hog on Facebook and Twitter, and obviously our website, blueshog.com. So check it out. We'll try to keep you updated on how things are going and what kind of fun we're having down there with the Banditos.
Look forward to seeing you. Happy National Margarita Day. Thanks, Tim, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thanks for jumping on the show.
I love it, buddy. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. We are going to send it to Steve Dale, and we're going to send it to News. Thanks for listening. 720 WGN.